As per our agreement, we are at the right place for us to start our meeting, and the time is right. Good morning to all the honorable members. I can see that we have enough members in the house for us to start the proceedings today. I hope everybody had a good weekend and we're coming back full of zeal and zest. Good morning to officials of the Portfolio Committee and officials of the Department of Transport. I can see we also have guests with ourselves. The advisors are also with us here. So everybody in the house, the August House, a very good morning to all of you. May I hear the response before I continue? Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Sthabo Mangethe.
Wow.
Long live, Chair. Long live.
Thank you very much, Chambers. I can see you are proper, and as everybody is proper except for the few. any
you.
Apology? Valerie, any apology?
Chair, there's apologies from Ms. Nolichungu, who's not available this week, and from the minister who's attending an NCCC meeting. That's the only apologies that I have so far. In terms of the members, there are more than six members present in the meeting. I haven't received any further apologies.
So the latecomers like Honorable Mabena, Honorable Sithulo, Honorable Shabangu, those are latecomers.
Mr. Shabangu has a connection problem. Mr. Sithulo is in the meeting. We also have present Mr. May, Mr. McDonald, Mr. Yabo, Mr. Mangu, Mr. Wunsinger, and yourself.
Where is Honorable Mabena?
He's probably joining a little bit later, Chair. I haven't seen him online yet.
He's a latecomer. Let's point that properly. Where's Honorable Figile?
Probably also coming late, Chair. No apology and not online yet.
Same with
Mrs. Ramadwa.
Yeah, we will check on them as we close and request them to be on time. Thank you very much, Valerie. Can we check whether the DM has connected successfully, Cookie? Do we have DM with us? I can see your hand is up.
Chairperson, the DM is having technical problems, but once that is sorted out, she will connect.
Wow, Cookie, man. I was starting my meeting.
Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, I thought I should start the meeting by just highlighting the information we have been bombarded with the whole weekend, so that I'm sure everybody wants us not to say we are lacking information. The first piece of information that is in our disposal is additional information that was requested by us as the Portfolio Committee of Transport on the sources of revenue for the South African Civil Aviation Authority. That information, in case members have not seen it, it is right with us in our gadgets. And then I had a request which I've approved, and this is, I'm sure, for information to all of us, that there has been application made on my approval for the committee to have public hearings on the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill on the following dates. That is next month, from the 10th of March, 11th of March, that will be Thursday, 10th will be Wednesday. We'll then have Tuesday, the 16th of March, and Wednesday, the 17th. And the last one will be the Thursday, the 18th. I should hasten to say to the members, because we are hard workers, on the Thursday of the 11th, because of the change of the parliamentary program. As we normally say, our programs are always on the draft mode. They are a living document that is subject to changes. Parliament has made some changes in its program, and it has, as we expect, affected our program. There are dates where Parliament is going to start to sit at from 9 to 4. So on the 11th of March, the request is that we should sit from 18 hours to 20 hours, encroaching right deep into our lives. But as politicians, I'm sure we should understand that. And the same will go for the Thursday, 18th of March, same time. Otherwise, the other piece of information that we have are the comments that are received in a form of responses by the Department of Transport on the Civil Aviation Bill, the first comments. And we go on to have minutes of the 16th and the 17th. I hope the minutes of the 17th will be adopted tomorrow, and the minutes of the 11th and the 16th can be adopted today. Am I correct, Valerie?
Yes, Chair, the minutes of the 10th and the 16th.
Thank you very much, but we already have the draft for the 17th for members to acquaint themselves. And the last piece of information we have are the preparatory notes from the Honorable or the Advocate on the first round of submissions on the Civil Aviation Bill, the bill that was tabled with us on the 14th of November 2018 for the first time, and it lapsed, and we resuscitated it, and the bill is with us. So our business today, honorable members, the agenda is deliberations on the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill, Bill number 44 of 2018. I'm raising all these issues to say we now have all the information to take this bill forward and air our view as the committee. And I'm sure we are going to use fruitfully the 3-4 hours we have to ensure that we now cut the grass down to size in terms of airing our views to be known as a committee. And with that having said, I now invite Advocate Nell, whom I'm told is ready and capable to lead us on these deliberations. I can see the screen, and I want members to sit up firm on their seat as the plane is taking off. Advocate, over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. For today, I'm trying to use the technology as much as we possibly can, because there are several documents we need to refer to in going through the bill. So members will see a split screen that shows on the top left hand is the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill that's before members for consideration. Next to us here on the right is the draft A list that the legal advisors pulled up for members last year, August, before we went for the additional advertising regarding the Insolvency Act clauses. On the bottom left here, I've got the PowerPoint presentation responses from the department on the initial round of submissions, and our last one here. Bottom right-hand side is the newest responses to the submissions. just also because this is an amendment bill, members, it's a little bit different than the ERT bill that we've been working through. ERT is a brand new bill. This is an amendment of a principal act. So if needed, I will toggle between the amendment bill as well as the principal act. It might be I hope members will be able to see or at least then cross-reference to their own documents as they have it. So Chairperson, just to get us going, going past the introduction, then we'll start off with the first clause, which is amendment to the definition section. So members will see here, in terms of the A list, there was already some proposed additional amendments to be added. So we have here air service. There was also in some of the comments mention made of aircraft in flight. There was some comments made on whether we use airport or aerodrome. There were some comments on air service and how that might change when the air service amendment bill eventually does come into Parliament. There was comments on the use of the commissioner instead of the director of civil aviation. There was some comments made on who exactly is the executive responsible for aircraft accident. An incident investigation, and that is the definition section. So just to take members back here, following the discussions on the first round of comments, there was a proposed substitution of the air service definition to the one that we have here in the draft A list. So that would then be this section here, air service. In terms of the A list, the committee would propose that definition is changed to air service means any service operated by means of an aircraft to transport passengers, freight or mail. So we would just need some input from members on whether or not they're still happy with that proposed amendment. And then there is an insertion here at line 41. Just to have the Civil Aviation Authority in here in terms of this proposed amendment. So members, that is the definitions. Chairperson, I think if we can just get clarity on an input for the definition section before we move on to the next clauses from members, then we can go to the next one that's in the A list, Chair.
Honorable Manu.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much, Advocate. Before I comment on what Advocate has said, I just wanted to make a slight correction on what the Chair said about Advocate before she started. You said you are told that she's ready and capable. I want to correct the last part. We know that she is capable. We didn't hear, Chair. That was on a lighter note. Chair, I move that we approve and accept the recommendations as the recommendations of the committee as submitted by Advocate. Thank you, Chair.
Chambers. Mondis. As you lower your hand, Chambers, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mangete. No, I do agree with, I support the motion from Honorable Mango, but The issue that I'm trying to check is that one of the airline and aeroplanes, because Chairperson, I'm not actually convinced that we have to change that that name, because I don't see the reason why we have why must we change the name of airline. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any other hand that has another view? Honorable Lawrence.
Chairperson, I am in agreement with what Honorable Manchu said, and I support and second his motion that what was submitted by Etsukut now be adopted.
Thank you very much. Anybody who has a different view, may I get to know about that view? As Honorable McDonald is lowering his hand, thank you very much for your cooperation, Honorable McDonald. So we are all in tandem. am I correct? Are we agreeing with Honorable Manu?
You are correct, Chairperson. We agree.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramatwa, and welcome. Thank you very much, Advocate. Can we move?
Yes, Chair. Then members will see here in the draft A list, after we had those two definitions to add to the bill, the A list goes to Clause 8. So I'm going to move away from the A list document for a little while and just carry on here with Clause 2. Clause 2 is the amendment of Section 2 of the Principal Act. Now, the Principal Act is not as clear as our PDF document. I just want to get to the clause there for members in case we need to do that cross-referencing there. Okay, there we go. So that's Section 2, the application of the Act. So members will see here, this is mainly a removal of reference to the convention, the transit agreement and protocol, as well as removing reference here to civil aviation regulations. And then here is some additions that allows for the South African Police Services and Customs to be added there to the Act. If we just have a look here at subsection 4, for example, if we go here, sorry about that, Chair, my dog is looking for attention. Here, the application of the Act, the Principal Act, Chair, will see here that it reads this Act, the Convention, Transit Agreement and Protocol. So the new proposal is to remove reference to those so that it reads only as this Act, except where expressly excluded under this Act applies to every aircraft, aerodrome, air navigation facility, every person employed at or in connection thereto, all foreign registered and the South African aircraft and personnel. So if members are happy with this proposed amendment in the bill, that's up for members to consider and just make sure that they're happy for that. Members, just to go here to subsection 4 to see where we are now proposing the addition of customs. Subsection 4 of the Principal Act looked like this. So there was only reference to the South African National Defence Force as well as the police service. There was no mention in here of customs. And we do know that we do need some customs in there as well for our international airports, so that they are included in that aspect. Chair, if members are fine with the purpose of the Act, if Chair wants to take some comments before I move on there.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Honorable Mangu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Advocate. I would like, through you, Chair, to ask if Advocate could maybe just expand a little bit on the issue that refers to the SANDF and the South African police, the one she just mentioned that is excluding customs. I do recollect that there was some lot of discussion around that, but my notes, I couldn't collect there. What is the desired amendment and what was it saying and what is the effect thereof? If you permit, Chair, through you, that is the clarity I'm seeking. And then the rest I'm pretty fine with, but I have just a question on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Masbonge Mhlekazi. Wangakithi. Advocate, could you quickly, or maybe let me just check, is any other person or we are in agreement before we clarify? Let me see hands. Are we pretty fine? Any hand? I would like to interact with the living meeting. If we don't have a problem, let me get a hand that says we are fine, Chair, with the proposals. Honorable MacDonald.
Chair, as I lower my hand, thank you very much. Chairperson, I would also like, because it was a serious discussion on the when we deliberated about this bill previously, about the South African National Defence Force aircraft and the South African Police Services aircraft. So I am 100% the support of what Honourable Manchu said, so that we can get clarity on those specific issues, because we can't make something that will deliberately hinder the work of the South African National Defence Force or the South African Police Services, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, maybe let me take the approach to go back to Advocate to clean this one so that we can move on. Advocate, back to you.
Chair, the members are correct. It was one of the comments that came in regarding the use of this. I'm just trying to find it here in the department's document, but Chair, the department did do an explanation as to why we do need that. The department should be able just to clarify, from my recollection, it is because the SANDF does not necessarily only use the Air Force air bases. Sometimes they do need to use the commercial air bases from which to take off. But the SANDF has always been part of the Principal Act. Members will see here, they have always been in the Principal Act. The addition, the SANDF as well as the police service were in the Principal Act. What is proposed by the department in terms of the amendment is that we also include customs, because customs was never specifically included in the Principal Act. If members just want some more clarity on why the Act does refer to SANDF and the police service, then I think the department can just come in here to give some additional clarity on those aspects, Chair.
Thank you very much. At this point, let's welcome the Honorable Deputy Minister. I can see she has arrived. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Valerie?
Yes, Chairperson?
There's somebody who has connected through a phone. Is that person not able to connect and let us have a name properly? This is an official meeting.
Chair, I've asked the person to identify themselves, but I think it's Mr. Chabangu who has issues connecting, so sometimes it's only the phone that's working. We'll just ask him to put his name on so that you can know it's him.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Valerie. Jambas.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Advocate. Chair, I am of the view that if the only addition is customs and the SANDF and SEBS were always in the Principal Act, therefore that I would be comfortable with that explanation. And once more move that the committee accepts that amended recommendation. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Babulisa Ujamba Somfe. Asato Landelayo, Mhlekazi, Baba Chris Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I can recall, and I also made a note around the comments received, and it was Mr. Henny van Sail that spoke about the military and police aspect, and he referred to 142 sub 2 versus the shared services of military and police. So if we could just have a look there. Or if this could help and assist, but in principle, I don't have a problem, and I surely support the motion that this should be included without objection. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Liabo. Are you in support, sir? I thought the Honorable Yabo is...
Yes, I'm in support, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other member who's not in support? Any problem going once? Twice, and thank you very much, Advocate. This part we are fine with as a portfolio committee. As members have said, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. I did put it up here. It was on slide 17 of the department's first response regarding the SANDF and SAPS aircraft. So members can just have a look there, as Mr. Hunsinger indicated. Then going on to the clause 3, amendment of section 3. Just to show members what Section 3 of the Principal Act looks like, the power to carry out and apply the Convention, Transit Agreement and Protocol. So there is a proposal that the heading is changed as follows, to read power to carry out and apply Convention and Transit Agreement. So the proposal there is just to remove reference to the protocol, because the name of the protocol is the Convention and Transit Agreement. So this clause does say it does apply. So if members just recall back to this, there's no need to have the addition of it in here, which is why the department was proposing to remove it, because we have a clause that specifically deals with it. So there's also a substitution in subsection 1. Where it is proposed to read the minister may, so they are removing in consultation with the Civil Aviation Authority. This is what the old clause looked like. The minister in consultation with Civil Aviation Authority may do all things necessary to ratify or cause to be ratified on behalf of the Republic any amendments or additions to the protocol or the transit agreement. Then the next one is by substitution in subsection for the following, do all things necessary to ratify and cause to be ratified. So again, this is just so that it's consistent with the amendment to the heading. So it would then just read to the additions to the convention and the transit agreement, which may be made. It is within the powers of a minister to work with these protocol agreements. He's also the one that does sign them on behalf of the country. So the members can ask the department for some input here if they do need some input. But this is what is proposed. It's only going to affect this first section of the original section 3. So Chair, I'm just going to pause there again for input.
Thank you, Advocate. Thank you very much. Honorable Manu.
Chair, I do apologize for always being the first one. Please accept my apology in advance. And I see I'm not invited to whatever is happening there, but it's okay. Chair, maybe the advocate is correct. That was going to be my request. And it is my understanding that all these powers that end up, or responsibilities rather, with our agencies that the minister is responsible for are originally his or her powers. But these agencies are established to assist the minister with the technical inputs as that area would be their expertise. So having said that, I would, through you, Chair, request that we have from the department as to why the removal now of consultation with the Civil Aviation Authority. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Jambas. Thank you very much. Advocate Masombuk, I'm told you are in the meeting.
Morning, Chairperson. Is that you did not acknowledge us, officials of the department? That is why you are told that we are in the meeting. Nonetheless, Chairperson, thank you very much.
No. No, that's not true, Advocate. If you say you connected the meeting,
Chair, that's on a point of order, Chair. That was out of line, Chair. On a point of order.
No, let me talk to Advocate nicely, Honourable McDonald. I did acknowledge everybody, Advocate. All the officials and even the guests. And I did say good morning to all, and people said good morning to me. It's a pity that I did not hear your voice, and I'm sorry about that, but I really did acknowledge you. If you did not hear, it is my fault, I accept. Now that you are here, Advocate, let's hear your voice. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the correction you've made to me. The purpose of removing in consultation, Chairperson, we are aligning the bill with the Constitution. It is the prerogative of the Minister in terms of Section 231 of the Constitution to ratify conventions. And now if you say in consultation with, then it means there should be an agreement between the Minister and Civil Aviation. But administratively, it is normal that we consult with our entities. But now, if we say in consultation with, then we are taking away or eroding that power conferred by the institute, by the Constitution to the minister. That is the rationale behind, in short. Thank you.
Loud and clear. Must talk as advocate.
Talk as the Chairperson.
Siyabonga. Ubaba ukhetha amabala wakwasithole. Ngena ba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm trying to understand the issue of the Minister May. Because if you say May, what about if you say the Minister must, so that the Minister must have that constitutional obligation instead of saying May?
Okay. Baba Ulisa Wagwaman.
Thank you so much. Let me greet Advocate Masombuka in case I'm accused also of not greeting you. Good morning, Advocate. Chair, I do not agree with what Advocate is saying. I don't see where the erosion is when a minister is consulting his or her own entity. Unless we are saying it suggests that it is an obligation for him or her to consult, but I don't see any erosion of the authority, unless there are examples where we can be referred to that have caused frustration in the past on such a thing. And also, I also do not agree that the current form or wedding removes any authority of the minister to be a signatory of the country in terms of any protocol or agreement that the country enters into. But the consultation with any entity, in my view, it's enriching that authority that the minister has. So, Chair, from where I'm sitting, I hear what Advocate is saying, but I think really I don't support it. I really don't support it. So thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may just make a last example, it's like maybe, I don't know how the Act reads, the Sunral Act, but it's like saying the minister will approve increases of tariff without, I mean, then we remove consultation or with recommendation by Sandra. I think, Chair, sorry. Yeah, we are in a public meeting. There is a word I would have used which will not be appropriate here. I'm not convinced, Chair, and I rest my case on that point.
Ubaba Ulisa Gamani. I umanchu mani. Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I feel protected. Yabok.
Thank you very much. The Macheloni. Boramadwa.
The Macheloni Award, the Mudrachi Duro. Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I just want to check with the advocate from the department which section in the constitution that he has mentioned. That is the first one. Secondly, concerning consultation, what is it that is happening now? How is the minister consulting the entity? Those are the two questions that I want clarity on. Thank you.
As you lower your hand, Nolebuanga Manda Boramadwa, thank you. Baba U Chris Uhunsinga.
Chairperson, the constitution in section 231 sub 1 is very clear that the negotiating and signing of all international agreements is the responsibility of the national executive. It is therefore not conditionary or attached to any consultation as such. And I'm sure, you know, from how our executive operates, there will be consultation, but It is not covered by a may or a must or anything related to that. So, I mean, the Constitution is superior to all laws and all acts and all legislation. So therefore, Chairperson, I don't see the necessity for a conditional requirement in this act. I think we are walking on thin ice in this one. The negotiating and signing of international agreements is the responsibility of the National Executive according to 231 sub 1 of the Constitution. That's how it stands.
Honorable Hansinger, thank you. Honorable Mapena, is Honorable Mapena in the house?
No, Chairperson, I'm here. I'm just listening attentively through colleagues. So, yeah.
Your view on this one?
No, Chairperson, I think I would agree with what Honorable Hansinger has just said. So I will align myself to that.
Chambers.
Chair, thank you. I just wanted to hear from the colleague, Honorable Hansinger, is he supporting the amendment there so that we are clear? I'm hearing him saying he's supporting the amendment as clarified by Advocate Masombuk. If that is the case, I am more than comfortable to withdraw my earlier comments. So, but it was not clear what he's saying at the end. Thank you so much.
Masbonge Jambas. Honorable Hansinger is saying, as you lower your hand, Mhlonishwa, he's saying the Constitution is very clear, the power is conferred to the minister. Therefore, it is correct what Advocate Masombuk is saying, in short. Am I interpreting you correctly, Honorable Hansinger? Thank you very much. I can see you nodding.
Chair, I withdraw my earlier submission, therefore. Thank you, Chair.
Baba Ulisa, Baba Ma. Kunendoda la ebizwa ngo Frank uJenkins. I see your hand up, sir.
My hand, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members.
Yes.
If my hand is up, that must have been an electronic error. My hand was not up. Earlier, I wanted to indicate to the committee chair, but we've moved on, that the issue of SAPs and so on.
When we start humbly, I just can see your name, sir. Who are you?
Chairperson, my video is on. I'm Frank Jenkins, Chair. I'm Senior Legal Advisor of Parliament. I'm assisting the committee with this, and I've been with the committee since we started with this bill, Chair. I don't know why my hand is up. I don't even see a button for my hand on my screen. I think administrator can take it off, Chair. I'm here if you need me. I'm part of a meeting, Chair.
Can we give you a glass of cold water, sir?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Let's move. I think we are agreed on this one.
I've not been answered, Chair.
You have not been answered.
Yeah.
Chairperson, okay. I think Honorable Ramadwa has also not been responded to.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for reminding me, Honorable Member. Advocate, can we quickly respond to Honorable Stole and Honorable Ramadwa?
Chair, there are many advocates. Which one?
Wow. Advocate Masombuga.
Thanks, Chairperson. I thought the issue of Section 231 is properly clarified by myself and Mr. Hamsinga. And
it's not Mr., it's Honorable.
Honorable Mr. Hamsinga.
Thank you very much.
If I'm putting it properly.
Yes.
Yes, the issue of 231 of the Section 231 of the Constitution has been clarified as it is. The Constitution gave the minister power to sign treaties or international agreements. Therefore, he cannot share that power with any other person. But practically, we do consult our stakeholders, like the Civil Aviation Authority, when we do things which will affect them, especially on implementation of those particular conventions or protocols. Then the issue of May gives the minister discretion. The minister may consult with the Civil Aviation Authority, but it does not give him an obligation. If you put must, it's as good as saying in consultation with. Chairperson, there is a difference between in consultation and after consultation. In consultation means there must be consensus between the two parties before they can move forward. After consultation means that after having consulted the authority, that the person who's given the authority to act, then he can consult and proceed in performing that particular action. So may give the minister discretion to do something, must obligate the minister to do it, whether he likes it or not, he must do it. Then in consultation means that there must be consensus between the parties that are consulting each other. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm clarifying the issue.
As we lay this matter to rest, I think the popular view here is that this paragraph as captured by the department is the correct one in terms of the Constitution. And Advocate Masombuga has just clarified the issue of May. It actually leaves a room for the executive to actually do other issues like consulting. I therefore think we have now responded to all the questions, unless I'm wrong. I hear somebody saying we move.
Yeah.
Can that voice come to the fore? Boramadwa?
It's not me, but we have, you are correct. We were answered.
Thank you. So you are happy. Can we move?
Yes, we can move, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any other person who has an issue here? Nobody. Advocate Almanella.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Chair, going to clause 4, members will see here is another amendment to the heading. So the new proposed heading is functions of the minister in connection with act. Probably should be in connection with the act. The old heading, just to show members, the old heading was functions of the minister in connection with act, convention and transit agreement. So the first proposed amendment in terms of the bill is the amendment to the... Yes, Chair?
Can we clear that up in connection with the act? In terms of your law, you legal people, is it correct?
Chair, I think my grammatical mind is taking over, mm-hmm. which is why I would probably add with the act.
Yeah.
It could be with act because it's a capital A. The legal drafters might give some clarity on how they refer that. So Advocate Jenkins and Advocate Musambuka can come in here on that, Chairperson. But just to go on here, There's a proposal also for deletion of subsection 4. And then just to show members, subsection 4 here is this section of the Principal Act that reads, the minister must designate the Civil Aviation Authority as the appropriate authority for the purposes of carrying out the functions of this act and convention and set strategic goals for the Civil Aviation Authority. So the proposal in the bill is to delete that subsection. That is clause 4, Chairperson. So I think members can just give input whether or not they would be happy with that proposed deletion. We've already indicated that above, we are taking out the reference to convention and transit agreement. So that is also, again, a consequential amendment to the previous already agreed to portions. Chair, so I'm just giving it back to you for members' input on that one. I'm just going to put it on the act.
Advocate, thank you very much for returning the reins to the chair. Maybe you are too short for the members to comprehend. I don't see any hands. Okay, there is Honorable Chris Onsinga. Vegas, Baba Chris Onsinga, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in looking at the subsection where the minister must designate a function to civil authority, I mean, isn't it a natural consequence, civil aviation being part of the department's functions? To me, it sounds like the minister then only has to like trigger the functioning thereof, which to me sort of seems to be excessive. So I'm happy for that clause just to be dropped.
Long live member Baba Oketa Mabala Wawastol.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sometimes I didn't hear the reason for deleting that subsection 4. Because if you check this subsection, it says the minister must designate the Civil Aviation Authority as the appropriate authority for the purpose of carrying out the functions of this act and conventions and set strategic goals for Civil Aviation Authority. I'm trying to check the last part of it, where he's supposed to set the strategic goals for the civil aviation. If the whole sentence has been the whole session has been deleted, what will be the input from the department on that one? Thank you very much.
Advocate, I am sure that your gadget is not failing you this time. This time, can I go back to you, Advocate Frank Jenkins?
Thank you, Chair. Just on two things. Yes, that clause is being removed. As far as I know, Chair, the department can maybe say something on it, but according to the memorandum on the bill, it's not necessary to have it there, like Honorable Insinger said. But Chair, I wanted to just answer Advocate Nell, one of the advocates, on the drafting. When we draft legislation, we do not use articles or prepositions or stuff like that in the heading. So it is just as it is, Chair. We don't put the before the act when we're dealing with the heading. It's not a grammar issue. That's how it's drafted, Chair. That's how I've been taught. It's not my rule. I'm just implementing it. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. So the English does not matter. Your law matters.
I'm just the messenger, Chair.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Thank you. Thank you as you lower your hand, Advocate.
I will do. Will do.
Thank you very much.
It's 10 hours.
Can we quickly answer the strategic, what happens to the strategic goals if we delete that sentence, as Honorable K.P. Stoller has asked? Who is ready and happy to take that question and clarify it? Maybe let's go back to Ubaba or Advocate Wakwamasombu.
Chairperson, the minister's strategic goals are dealt with in the APP of the minister, with, together with the CAA. That is why we take that particular provision out. Thanks.
Ah, siyabonga ba. Sasekuzoyile. Mhlonishwa ubaba uhunsinga. Ngiyasibona isandla siphezulu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson's strategic plans and budget plans are obligated by financial acts like the PFMA, and therefore nothing falls away or through the cracks in the absence of this act. I mean, the minister is in no way obligated to instruct any entity to fulfill its functions, since it's mandated through other means. Because, I mean, yes, so I think I propose that we just simply concur with the deletion of that section, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we are now all in agreement. I see the hand of honorable Lisa Manu.
I support the deletion, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anybody who has issues, going once. Thank you very much, Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chair. I think also that something that might assist members is that since the Civil Aviation Act, the Principal Act, came in, members will recall we've also worked on the Civil Aviation Authority Amendment Bill in the past. So there is a Civil Aviation Authority Act that will deal with all these issues. So this clause most likely would have been there before the promulgation of the SACRA Act, which will make sense to remove it. But then moving on to the next clause, which will be clause 5, and that is amendment of section 5 of the Principal Act. So members will see here again, there is the proposed amendment to the heading to read enactment of convention and transit agreement. Again, consequential amendment of the removal of AND protocol. Members will see it also there in sub section 1 and 2. So that is a consequential amendment. If we look at 5, it really is just removing protocol from the reference in that that section. So if members are fine with that, we can move on to the next clause, Chair.
Members, let's Baba Uchambase, Ulisa Wagamangu.
I move forward to support that proposal, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manu. Let's see anybody who supports.
I support, Chair.
Support.
Supported, Chair.
Ramadwa, Honorable, there we go. Honorable Ramadwa.
No, I support.
Thank you very much. Honorable Stoller.
Okay.
Unjani wena mfowethu, umnandi?
I'm not.
No, I'm not. As yeah, okay. Mondise sambe.
Back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Akbar May.
Yes.
Thank you very much. You support the proposal, Istemsam. Dank je, Baya, meneer.
It must.
Kan ons voortgaan, advocaat Almanel?
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 6 does an amendment to Section 7. I'm just going here to the Principal Act to Section 7 for members. So Section 7 deals with the permission to use land held under any reconnaissance permission, exploration, prospecting or mining authorization or permission for airports. So the bill looks at a substitution of subsection 1 and 2 with the following subsections. The members will see here subsection 1 and 2 has mineral and petroleum resource development in there. There's just a removal of minerals and energy. When we refer to the ministers, it is always better, instead of referring to the department's name or the name at the time, to change it up to the minister responsible for mineral resources. As members are well aware, that the departments do change their names and they are absorbed or split from time to time. Members will see here we have a proposal to remove the reference of airports or heliports to just referring to an aerodrome. The same in the next one, again, taking out the reference of airports or landing places for aircraft and use aerodrome. Members will recall it was one of the aspects that did come in the submissions. And some of the members did need some clarity on why we are going to aerodrome when the public understands and knows what an airport is. And the department did give an explanation on the use of aerodrome, linking it to the preferred use of such airspace references by ICAO. So members can just give their input on these two aspects before we move on to Clause 7.
Are you done, advocate? Are you giving the reins back? Let me assume that you are doing that.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Unsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm comfortable with aerodrome. It includes the building, the airport, the heliports, and all sorts of other buildings. I think it might be of comfort to my colleague Honorable Sitole to know that this does not mean that we need to refer to airports in a different manner. It is just a legislative correction and an alignment to international trends.
Thank you very much, Honorable Onsinga. We'll have to practice if we agree. Baba Keta Mabala Mosuke Kayoti Jing, Singa Hamba Genga Aerodrome. Airport. Members, let me see members who are supporting. Baba Lisa Gamangu.
The amendments are supported, Chair, and I second my colleague, Honorable Hunsinger. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ramadwa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I support the amendment.
Anyone against the amendments? Going once, twice, done. Back to you, Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 7. I just want to get here. Clause 7 is the amendment of Section 8. Section 8 deals with trespass, nuisance, responsibility for damage and insurance for damage or loss by registered owners and operators of aircraft. So here is a proposal to substitute subsection 1. Again, consequential amendment here to remove reference here to the convention and the transit agreement as we did above. And there was an amendment proposed for subsection 5 here, reference to taking away the use of is and adding may be caused by instead of an aircraft. The department is proposing the use of his or her aircraft to any person or property on land. So just to have a look at what the Act stated, it was no person. There's the reference to the convention and transit agreement, so that's consequential. And then subsection 5 for members. Subsection 5 used to read, a registered owner or operator of an aircraft must have insurance as prescribed for any damage or loss that is caused by an aircraft to any person or property on land. So member sees reference to his or her aircraft. Chair, I'm just going to pause there again and give this one back to you for members' input.
Thank you very much for the reins, Advocate. Let's hear from Afbari Liede. He can hand the obstacle, I believe. Any take? Are you in agreement? You must say so if you are in agreement. There's no silence in the court. We must be speaking here. Let's hear Baba Uketa Mobalo's story. All right, Mvuitu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm supporting the amendment, but Chairperson, if they can explain that clause. That they want to substitute. When you check the clause 8, but from the principal act, subsection 2 does not apply where the damage or loss was caused by or contributed to by the negligent or willful act of the person by whom it was suffered. I'm trying to check that sentence. Where does it apply on the new subdivision of the Act? Thank you very much.
Advocate Almanel.
I think Mr. Sithole is there referring to the Principal Act, Section 8, Sub 3, where it reads, Subsection 2 does not apply where the damage or loss was caused by or contributed to by the negligence or willful act of the person by whom it was suffered. The department can just give clarity there on this. There's no proposal to amend that subsection in this bill, Chair. If it's just clarity that Honorable Sithole is seeking, the department can just indicate why they have that one there, Chair.
Advocate Ubaba Umasumbuk.
Thanks, Chairperson. We are not amending that subsection 3. Is standing as it was, as it is in the Principal Act. What we are amending is subsection 5. And here there's no substantial amendment except that we are making textual improvement in order to enhance the reading of the Act under subsection 5. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mondiza Uzwileva.
Ngizwile cha.
Siyaqhubeka u right umnandi mfowethu.
Ah namnandi.
Anybody who has any issue or against going once? Thank you very much, Advocate. The committee is happy. Can we move? Advocate Alma Nell.
Thank you, Chair. Now we get to Clause 8, where members, I'm just going to refer members to also the A list, Clause 8 amendment. Now, this is where a lot of our submissions input also came in. The bill proposes that Chapter 4 of the Principal Act is substituted by Chapter 4 in, as indicated in this bill, which is the ASIP, the Aircraft Accidents and Investigations Investigation and Establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. So just to go to the Act, just to give members a view of what Chapter 4 there looks like. Chapter 4 here was reference to the aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents, establishment of Aviation Safety Investigation Board in compliance with conventions, jurisdiction of Aviation Safety Investigation Board, and objects of Aviation Safety Investigation Board. So it's going to be quite a few screens here, Chair. So first year, the application of the chapter. That one we didn't have any issues with, or that first section. Any place under the Republic, any other place are requested to investigate. Department in the national sphere of government. The members will see here in our A list, there was a proposed amendment only on page 8, so I will get there. I'm just going through this one. Establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. It's hereby established. So the Amendment Act allows for the establishment of that body. The objects of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Don't think members or any of the submissions had issues with the objects thereof. Just to point out that the submissions, several submissions just required clarity on how we will ensure this first object of ASIP, and that is independence thereof. Just going through here. Members will see what they can do, what they cannot do, what findings they can make on the evidence, their jurisdiction, scope of jurisdiction that they have there, coordination of investigations, and then on page 8, compatible procedures. On page 8 here is where I think members will also have some passionate inputs about the appointment of the board of ASIP. Members would see here, if we look, there was a proposal in the A list here at line 32 that we say here after appointment or appointed that there is an insertion of by the minister. So it would be appointed by the minister. Principal before the members of the aviation safety are appointed. So it should be I think our lines might just have to move a little bit. Before the members of the Aviation Board is appointed, the Minister must, through media, invite members of the public to apply or nominate persons for appointment. Chair, I think I'm just going to pause here on this proposed Section 15 on the appointment, because I do know members are quite passionate about board appointments, and we might have some input here before I move on to the rest of this new chapter, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate, for coming back. Honorable Chris Honsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we have discussed this previously, and that the committee is fairly in agreement that the appointment should be made by Parliament, not by the Minister, and that the Parliament would in fact scrutinize the applications, process the applications by means of interviews, and then shortlist and propose and make recommendations of board members that should be appointed. Obviously, actual appointments is a different process, but in terms of involvement, in terms of the arm's length distance, the independence, elements that we motivate and justify this thinking of being involved with the appointment thereof. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hansinger. Honorable KP Stole.
Thank you, Chair. I just need some clarity on clause 15.2, where you say before the member of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board are appointed, the minister must, through the media, I'm trying to check the media, what kind of a media, or is it just all kind of a media? Because sometimes they say media, but you find that they are not using all the media, they just sometimes using the papers, and then they say they do advertise and that. And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the, on clause 11A, where it says conducting independent investigation, including when necessary public inquiries into selected aircraft accident and incident, in order to make finding as to their causes. And but if they can actually unpack that one, Chairperson, to understand it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Baba Uketa Mabala, as you lower your hand, say thank you for cooperation. Let's take Ubaba Ulisa Wabamangu.
Thank you very much, Chair. I heard what colleague Honorable Hunsinger was saying. I can't really recollect that. I'm not saying that's not what we said, but as it relates to the other bill, which is new bill, that one I do recall very well. Maybe other colleagues can assist in terms of that recollection. That's the only thing I can't recollect. Thank you, Chair.
Ubaba, Lisa Kaman, Siyabulela. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to give some clarity to Honorable Mangchu, as that we did in our previous deliberations. We did discuss the autonomy of the Accident Investigation Board, and it was raised that the board, the Accident Investigation Board, should be appointed by Parliament, and it was an outflow of the previous engagements regarding the single transport economic regulator that we decided as a portfolio committee. And I think it was even raised by Honorable Mantu that board this appointment was must be similar to the board or that star, and that the board must be appointed through a process of parliament, Chairperson. And then we still discussed and we waited. We still had some inputs regarding the autonomy of the Aircraft Investigation Board, specifically because of the funding requirements and or the lack of thereof from the fiscus, Chairperson. So I just wanted to give clarity that we did make a decision on this, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any other take? Baba Pidmei.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Do I understand Mr. Hansinger correct? If he says the parliament must be involved, does he mean the Portfolio Committee on Transport, that we must submit a short list to the minister? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable May. Honorable Hansinger, could you just clarify, Honorable May?
Thank you, Chairperson. My proposal indeed suggests that it would be a similar process as what the SABC board appointment is undertaken. Parliament would then decide which portfolio committee, and obviously it would be the Transport Portfolio Committee that is involved in scrutinizing the applications, qualifying the applications, processing it, having the interviews, and then shortlisting a number of names for further processing and appointment. But it would be a recommendation and involvement of the portfolio committee represented by public reps, thereby enhancing the autonomy, but most importantly, re-establishing credibility, which is much needed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Pete May, are you going to lower your hand, sir? Thank you very much for cooperation.
I support the proposal of Mr. Hansinger. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we clarify, Honorable Keta Mobalas-Tole's question? Advocate Frank Jenkins, can you help us here, parliamentary advisor?
Person, I can try.
Yeah.
Chair, as the bill is at the moment, as I understand the question, is that Parliament wants the committee, well, not the committee, but we want, as a committee, recommend to the House that Parliament should have a role in the appointment of the investigation board. Or that's a policy issue that we want to consider. As the bill is at the moment, that belongs to the minister. The minister will initiate the process, ask for nominations from the public, et cetera, et cetera. So I think what needs to be done, Chair, if the committee wants a role for Parliament, similar to the SABC board, I think one can just model the process. If the minister must get the nomination and submit all of those names then to Parliament, or must Parliament initiate the process? I would, from my experience in Parliament, say the minister can... it's an issue of budget as well, Chair, because these things are not cheap to run a process like that. But for the minister to get the nominations and to submit the list to Parliament, and then for Parliament to develop a process to have those interviews, much like we do with the National Gambling Board, much like we do with the SABC and so forth, there must be a role for the minister. The minister should be the appointing authority, Chairperson, because although it's an autonomous role of the board, it is still an executive function. It's a board implementing legislation, and Parliament, according to the Constitution, must exercise oversight over the implementation of legislation. So the minister must appoint them initially. So I think what my advice to the committee is, what exact role do you envisage yourself? And if it is the interviewing process and then making a recommendation to the minister, good, that we can draft into the bill. And the question on that last one, Chair, and I'll end with that, is do we submit a list of names to the minister, and the minister has no discretion to select those names, or do we submit, much like the SABC, a list, say one and one third or one and a half times the number of people that should be appointed, and the minister then decides on the list who he or she would want to appoint, whoever is the minister at that time, Chair. So it's just those little details that one needs to work out. My advice would be to leave always some room for maneuvering. Sometimes someone is not available that Parliament has recommended. So it's good to submit, to make a recommendation to the minister for appointment that can be more than the number that should be appointed, but in an order of preference. And so to really control the discretion of the minister, sir, if we want to have proper oversight and to ensure that autonomy of the board. I think that's what the committee wants, Chair. I hope I've answered the question.
Thank you very much, Advocate Frank Jenkins. Advocate Nell, you want to say something?
Chair, I think just on Honourable Sithole's reference and question to media and what is required when there should be call for nominations or publication in the media, the department can clarify how their process works for that. I know members have seen in terms of our publication of calling for bills, Parliament communications determines how broadly and how those aspects are done. The media is normally used just as a reference. It'll be newspaper publications, radio adverts, Twitter, social media platforms. These days it covers all those aspects. I think there was also a request by the member just that the department gives some clarity on the independence of the investigations and inquiries. Just a request to clarify that clause, Chair.
Thank you very much. I was trying to take all the advocates. Advocate Masombuka, do you have anything to say?
Yes, Chairperson, practically what we normally do in the appointment of boards like this, we'll assist the minister to put an advert in an open media, meaning newspapers, gazettes, and radios. And then we'll receive the nominations and we'll create a long list. That long list will be every person who has applied. Then the minister will establish a committee that will be doing a short listing consisting of the experts of the subject and other employees to do a short list for the minister. Then it will be submitted to the minister for a final short list. In the legislation, it depends as to whether do you want to take that short list and put it again in a gazette for the members of the public to comment on the eligibility of that particular short list to be appointed as members of the board. Then you'll get input from every person of the public on the eligibility of that particular appointment. Others will get positive statement for appointing a particular individual. And in other instances, you'll find that you get negative statement not to appoint others. Then the minister will consider the inputs given on the eligibility of appointment. And then he will take that into account and come up with a final short list for appointment of those particular members. And ultimately, once we've got the final shortlist, then the minister will appoint those particular members as members of that particular board. So practically, that's how we go about appointing boards. Thank you, Chairperson.
So, Advocate, the process of Parliament being involved, how Advocate Jenkins have tabled it, do you have any problem with it?
Not necessarily, Chairperson, except that the committee should decide as to who initiated the process. Is it going to be the minister calling nominations and maybe submitting the short list, or is he supposed to send the whole list of every person nominated to serve in the board, and it will be parliament that will be doing the short listing? That's where the committee need to decide on that. But otherwise, we are happy with the normal practical way we are doing an appointment of boards. But if that requires to be changed by the committee, they must decide. The committee should decide on who initiated the process. At what stage is the minister involved? So that it should be clear also for the drafters when they are going to come up with the provision for this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go back now to the committee and deal with this elephant. I don't know why we call issues that are problematic elephants. Maybe one will give me an answer one day. Honorable Manu. Earlier on you were saying you cannot remember. I'm deliberately coming back to you to check if in principle you have an issue with this, except the fact that you were not you couldn't remember.
Chair, I absolutely don't have any issue with it at all. Yeah, not at all, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would suggest that the process is triggered by invitation of the minister to invite applications, and that Parliament then does the interviewing, and then a list of recommended candidates be submitted to the minister for approval, final approval and processing, if that's what you're after, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody who has an issue with this, can we agree on the process as tabled by Honorable Hunsinger? Let me see hands. There is nobody agreeing, unfortunately. I don't know what's the problem. Anybody who's against? Maybe, there we are. Honorable Miriam Ramada.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not against, but I just want to check when do we do our oversight role in this issue? Because if we are saying we are going to do the interviews, and now I just want to understand that.
Yes, Honorable Ramada. Thank you very much. Honorable Ramada, as we engaged earlier on, we were made aware that in other departments and portfolio committees, this, what we are talking about here, is already happening. I think the example that is common, as members have been suggesting, is the example of the SABC, where Parliament, through the Committee of Communication, is involved, and that committee is involved in terms of dealing with the interviews, if I'm still correct, and then recommendations will go to the minister, and the minister will appoint. As I hear here, if under normal circumstances as a committee, if Parliament is not given any power to appoint, we do not have any oversight, except to say, could you inform us who have you appointed? I hope I am representing the facts correctly, but because I am not a lawyer, there is a lawyer here amongst ourselves and advocates for that matter. Let's start with the Honorable Hansinger.
Let me withdraw my question. Thank you.
Okay, your question is withdrawn. Thank you very much. Can you also withdraw your hand on the screen, Honorable Ramatwa? Thank you. Now I have two hands that are not withdrawn. Let me start with them. Honorable Lisa Wagwamangu, followed by Ubaba Ukheta Mabala Wagwasithole, in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I don't have a direct answer as to who initiates. I hear what my colleague, Honorable Nsinga, is saying. However, in line with your explanation now, it is also my view that it shouldn't be something that is not already practiced, which you correctly said we made example of the SABC. I can't recall from the top of my head if the invite comes from Parliament. Now, I would propose that while I'm not rejecting Honorable Hunsinger's proposal, but we get maybe some feedback of the example of SABC. I think the other one is ESCOM or whatever the case may be, so that we can just get some advice of in other department what is the role. But I think where we are 100% in agreement is that Parliament, through whichever committee, in this instance we assume it's Peace Transport Committee, should be involved in this process. The triggering and the finalization, I think that's when our learned colleagues should assist us by drawing examples of the other departments. Thank you very much, Chair.
Baba Ulisa Wagwamangu siyabonga siyabulela. Baba Ukheta Mabala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I think the first thing that we need to understand is that actually, who initiate the amendment of the regulations or the circumstances which come to when you come to board members is that Parliament or minister. If that one is so, because if you check all our clause, it says the minister may, the minister must. So now I'm trying to check who's supposed to initiate, because it is not the first time to have such an amendment to draft any regulations. Most of the time we receive the regulations or the amendment from the minister, and then the minister sends it to NA, and from NA, the NA will send it to a responsible committee. And then the responsible committee will take over from there. Because even the I don't know if they can give us which clause do they have from the communication department, so that we can actually check what is an objective of what we are saying. Thank you very much, Chair.
Advocate Nell, could you draw some few scenario, including SABC?
Chairperson, just from my experience in 2010 when I was with the Committee on Communications, for the Broadcasting Act, also the clause that we read out when we discussed the ERT bill. In terms of the SABC, Parliament calls for the nominations, it does the interviews, and it submits a short list of board appointment nominees to the president for appointment. So it differs slightly under the different entities. I don't have the ESCOM and Gambling Board information in front of me, but I think Advocate Jenkins made a very fair point that the advertising and the calling for nominations sometimes is a quite pricey process. Mm-hmm. And in terms of budgeting for it, because this has always been a function in the department, one could perhaps it could be better placed if the minister just places the advert and then submits the nominees to Parliament for interview process. I think what we do need here, in terms of the ERT bill, members' view was Parliament does the advert, calls for nominations, does the interviews and submits the list. We do need to get clarity, as Advocate Jenkins asked, now from members if they want a similar process to what we agreed to under the ERT bill, or if they would like a different process where the different options would be that the minister publishes or calls for nominations, submits the list of nominees for interviews by Parliament. Parliament then submits it back to the minister on the shortlist for the appointment. This is where we need. The other option would then be a submission to the president, but I think Advocate Jenkins made a fair point on the duties of the minister in terms of the civil aviation, that the minister make the appointment then at the end of the day. In terms of the oversight question, Chief, I can just make this point that the statutory appointments in terms of the legislation that falls to committees is already regarded as a part of oversight. So in looking at the nominees, whether we publish it or get the list from the minister, that is in essence one of our oversight posts. This proposal that members want, greater involvement by Parliament, will just strengthen the oversight check.
Thank you, Advocate. Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I am in agreement with what was suggested by Advocate Jenkins as well as by Advocate Nell. Aligned to my earlier proposal, which now puts different options of procedure and processing on the table. And in relation to the processes used in appointing the ESCOM board, gambling board, and SABC board chairperson, we are dealing here with Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Also, alignment to international standards. So therefore, Chairperson, I would opt that we investigate this to adopt a system which from the onset is the most transparent that we can get, given that it is an international aligned function and role. So therefore, Chairperson, the most transparent system would probably be the one that would give the best and most comfort in this regard.
Baba Ulivas Maba, so I see your hand is up, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just want to bring something to the attention of the committee with your permission. One of the findings on our audit was the length of time it takes for us as a state to pass our regulations and legislation, and also the appointment of institutions like the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, for instance. So I just want to that whatever process is envisaged, this should be taken into account, that the process, if we can get a process which will not make it difficult to have the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, and in case there are vacancies, we have seen quite a number of instances where there were vacancies, but then they could not be filled because of the processes. As Honorable Amsinga has indicated, if we do not have the committee, that's an automatic finding from the ICAO side. I must also point out that, Honorable Chair, that we are currently sitting with a situation where it took more than 2 years for the tabling of a charter, just for tabling for information of Parliament, which is a constitutional requirement. Up to till now, we started 2 years ago. So we still have not gotten that. So I just wanted that to be taken into consideration. One, that it should not result in a situation where we do not have sufficient members, and then because of the cumbersomeness of the processes, we are unable to fill the position, because it will have serious impact on our safety regulations. Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Levers.
That's the man in Toronto, in Canada, Chair.
Yes.
Just for the record.
Yeah. Honorable Ansinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it is a very valid point which Mr. Mabaso, Advocate Mabaso, made. And I think it is quite different with this portfolio committee, since we don't mind having sittings, and you know, if it becomes a part of our duty and obligation, certainly it will be prioritized. Therefore, Chairperson, I propose that we accept the principle of an involvement by Parliament with the interviews, with the decision of who sits on the board, and that is then processed further after recommendation. But we accept the principle in light of the necessary independence and necessary transparency which this Aviation Investigation Board needs. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let me take the last speaker, then we move forward. Advocate Frank Jenkins.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Just for clarity's sake, for the work that we need to do on this provision, I want to suggest to the committee the preferred option in my view, but I'm not trying to prescribe anything. And I've looked at the clause dealing with the appointment process. The shortlist is drafted by four experts in the aviation industry under the direction of the minister. I think, Chair, it's after that point where the committee or parliament can come in to get that shortlist of 10 names. We need to appoint four people from that 10 names. So I would suggest that we include in there, we make an amendment to the bill there, Chair, to say that the shortlist must be sent to the National Assembly to make a recommendation to the minister for 1.5 times the names that must be appointed in order of preference, something like that, Chair. If I can get directions on that matter, myself and the department and committee staff, then we can work on that together, Chairperson. So I'm just asking for direction there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. As you lower your head, thank you very much. I think listening to the engagements on this matter is that we are agreed on a principle. Number one, that Parliament will be involved in this process. Can I get agreement on that one? Are we agreed on the principle? Members?
Chairperson agrees. I'm agreed. Honorable McDonald.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Wow.
Agreed.
Thank you very much. So the principle is out of the way. We have agreed with the principle. What I'm also getting here is that the issue we're trying to lay our hands and deal with was an issue whether the process starts from us, we finish it, and then we hand over recommendations to the minister, or the minister start with the process and brings the list of people who have applied, and we then sit with the interviews, and then we give, in this case, there's even a suggestion of if four people are going to be appointed, we give a list of 10 names as a principal. I hear you saying it will be better, even in terms of resources, if we allow the minister to kickstart the process, bring the list to us, we interview, we send recommendations back to him. Is that that's how I have heard you? Can we agree on that one? Let me see if we can get an agreement on it. Members? Are we in agreeable with that process?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, Chair.
Yes,
we're 100% in agreement, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Anybody who's against the process, this suggestion, going once, twice. Advocate Ne, thank you very much.
Okay, Chi, I just want to assist my colleagues that are going to draft the A-list. Are members agreeing on doing the interviews and then sending the shortlist, or are members agreeing with Advocate Jenkins' proposal that the minister makes use of experts in aviation, since we do need some experts in aviation to make the appointment for this investigating board body, and then they submit the a shortlist to Parliament to then consider those names?
Advocate, once more, I deliberately did not want to touch on who must be working with the minister, because that is not our purview as this committee. I think the interest of the committee is for the purposes of transparency and fairness, is that Parliament must be involved as an oversight act, and the capacity of the minister in terms of throwing people in, I think should be left with the minister. So what we are agreeing on is that the minister will do, will kickstart the process and bring the list to us, and we'll then sit with the interviews and then recommend it to the minister, as I've gathered it correctly, just to clear that point. Are we clear with the point, Advocate?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we now move?
Yes, Chair, I'm just getting my screen share back up. There we go. Okay, Chair, then moving on to the requirements for the appointment. Members will see here, this is, again, quite standard. They need a technical knowledge, special skills, expertise in civil aviation, possess suitable qualifications, expertise, and experience. Then, Chair, just going on to filling of vacancies and terms. Obviously, the appointment of the board agreement that the committee made will fall in and feedback to the filling of vacancies that will affect this clause as well. So the drafters will just take note of that. Disqualification and removal of members. Just again, this is very standard clauses in terms of appointments and disqualifications of board members. performance agreement between the Minister and Aviation Safety Investigation Board. As they will then report to the Minister, Chair will see here that they do need to do their performance agreement, or in some other aspects, we also refer to it as the board charter. Then the remuneration, fees and expenses of members of Aviation Safety Investigation Board. This is again one of those aspects that's dealt with in consultation with the Minister of Finance, because those terms are set out in Treasury regulations for board appointments. The meetings of the board, members will see here as it's required to do so. And this also deals with what happens if there's absence or incapacity. The administration of the board, all administrative work in connection with the board shall be carried out by employees designated by the Director General for such purpose. This would be the secondments that the department indicated in their presentations to members from the department itself. The Public Finance Management Act is linked to the board, so they are bound by the PFMA. The expenditure in connection with their functions, this is where they will draw their funding from, as per appropriations, levies imposed, and charges for any services rendered. Chair, I'm just going to pause here because we had some input in the submissions on what would, for example, happen in the instance of an aircraft crash over open water, as one of our submitters indicated that the expenses for such an investigation could run into the billions. And there's a need to make sure that the board will be financially able to then institute that investigation and that they would have the cover there. So the department might have to give some input on how they will make sure that if an instance like that does occur, where the funding is going to come from. Chair, then just going on to the conflict of interest, as is required by all board appointments, again, they must recuse themselves if they or their spouse, immediate family member, life partner, or business associate has a financial interest. Then also they may not hold direct or indirect financial interests. There are also agreements between the board and the commissioner. So this will be an agreement between ASIP and SACA, and what they need to do in terms of concluding those agreements. Agreements between the board and other departments or entities is also provided for in that clause. Then Chair, here on the independence and impartiality of the board and their investigations, this is where I would like to pause for members' input based on the submissions and some of the views that members raised, as well as some of the concerns that the department indicated here, Chair.
So you are pausing for the members to have concrete suggestions.
Yes, Chair, for the clauses from the new clauses proposed from 16 up to including here clause 28, if Chair can just get that input there from members.
We are no longer asking questions, we are making inputs. Am I correct?
Well, Chair, the questions may lead to greater input, and this is the members' bill now, so members must say what they want in the bill.
Advocate. Okay, thank you very much, Advocate. Honorable members, let's make our inputs mostly. If there's slight clarity-seeking questions, it's okay, but let's remember that this process for today, the deliberations are for us to begin to cut the grass down to size and have our view on these issues, whether we agree to this one or we want change, agree to the departments, and so forth and so on. Thank you very much. Let me take Honorable Lawrence McDonald, followed by Honorable Ketama Balastov. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I was wondering regarding this funding for this accident investigation, especially when an accident investigation could actually potentially bankrupt the South African Civil Aviation Authority. If we can't find a way of adding some sort of fuel, some sort of levy or some passenger levy that would then specifically be for future accident investigations, a small levy that will eventually go into a sort of a kitty that money can then be used when an accident does happen that requires 2 or 3 billion rand. And Chairperson, even a small accident costs 5 or 6 million rand to investigate. And we don't want to put undue pressure on already overstretched fiscus, whereby when an accident happens, and an accident can happen tomorrow, Chairperson, and that would severely impact the ability of the South African Civil Aviation Authority to do its work if it has no money. So, Chairperson, I would wonder if it would be possible that we look at that, Chairperson. That's my input. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable McDonald, your input is valid. As you lower your hand. Thank you, sir. Baba Uketa Mabala, followed by Ubaba Ohun Singh, in that order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I'm checking the requirement for appointment as members of Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Now, I'm trying to link this one with the transformation. Because if you check the clause 16B2, which says specific skills, professional standing, expertise, and experience in the matter concerning civil aviation, I'm trying to check what kind of qualifications are they talking about. And then when it comes to transformation, what catered for the new coming in the industry? And the other one, Chairperson, if you check the same, the clause B3 processing, possible qualification, expertise and experience in the field of aviation accident and accident investigation. What does that special skills means? Because if that this thing not be classified, it caused some concern about the incoming of new staff in the industry. Thank you very much, Chair.
Ulandela, when he has asked. Honorable Onzinga, as you lower your hand, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to support the proposal by Honorable McDonald. If we could also just get clarification in relation to that proposal of what is included in the current passenger safety charge. Because that has been presented to us last time as 75% of the budget income of civil aviation. Whether one should look at changing the name of that particular revenue income name, or you know, what is the current passenger safety charge consist of? Where is it generated from, and where is it allocated to? Because most certainly, aviation investigations are very, very, very expensive. And we've listened to examples of scenarios, God forbid, which we could never afford, but that can happen. So I would then further want to suggest, in support of the proposal of Honorable MacDonald, that such a fund be ring-fenced so that it cannot become part of a mainstream revenue income, as might have been the case with the passenger safety charge, so that such an income would be ring-fenced purely for safety investigations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Bunsinga. Ubaba, uthokoze mhlonishwa ubaba uThami wakwaMabhena.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think let me also pick up on two things here. I think when we had engagement with the department, one, what was apparent was that the Department of Transport currently funds the AIIT annually with only 30 million rands. And if we, some of the investigations might run into billions of rands. And I think I would want to support my colleagues to check in terms of, is there any way where we can get in terms of funding? In our deliberations also previously, we had asked the department to approach SARS, Treasury, and I think one other in terms of regulation, in terms of cash, like it was the National Credit Regulator, whereas they were saying that the other legislations there which might be that legislation might be a problem, but also in terms of ensuring the independence of the ASIP in this fashion, it might be perhaps prudent for us to get any mechanism whatsoever that would guarantee in terms of funding outside of the Department of Transport and also outside of SACAR. One other issue which we raised before, Chair, was if you are speaking about independence and impartiality as this is concerned, there was a presentation which was done by SACAR, which was a suggestion that the ASIP would be housed within almost the same building as or within the same building as SACAR. And here, if you look at Section 28, subsection, if you take it from 28, subsection 3, 4, 5, with emphasis on section 28, subsection 4, if any member of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, investigator, or accredited representative, expert, or advisor of the Aviation Safety Board fails to disclose any interest completed in the subsection, but also the aviation safety must take reasonable steps to ensure the necessary fairness and unbiased proper investigation. When we raised concerns, we said that some of the guys that would need to investigate some of these things, if there is no accident within the within the space, remember the deliberations was the South African airspace is quite safe. And in terms of ICAO, we're getting the highest rating because we report very less accidents compared to other airspaces across the world, and especially in Africa. So those people will be working in one building. And I think the example was the calibration aircraft which crashed. So the same people that whenever there's no investigation, they walk around the office, they chat to each other, go and eat lunches together. Now all of a sudden they have to investigate. If you want to ensure independence and impartiality, there must also be a situation where the ASIP is perhaps housed at a different location and also outside of Dakar. And I think, I think I would like to just end it there. Thank you.
Masibonge, Mhlonishwa, siyathokoza. Advocate Frank Jenkins.
Chairperson, thank you very much again. The issue of a levy, Chair, I just wanted to come in there. The committee, Parliament, National Assembly, even all ministers, perhaps you're aware of it, cannot introduce a levy in legislation. It's only the Minister of Finance that can bring legislation to Parliament that includes a levy. It's that's Section 77 of the Constitution. So it's a money bill that imposes taxes, levies, duties, or surcharges. And then Section 73 of the Constitution will tell us that only the Minister of Finance can bring such a legislation. So I just wanted to bring that to the attention of the committee, which I think they were aware of in a way, because to get this done, Chair, there's two things that one needs to do. One is to get some buy-in from National Treasury that they will do such funding, impose a levy or something like similar to that. And secondly, what some of the members have mentioned now, I think the last member that spoke, and the committee can do there is sort of the administration of that money. So one can create a legislation to say that this specific entity or this investigation body must get money that's ring-fenced. That's sort of the administration of the money. Parliament can make a bill like that. The committee can propose a bill like that. There's a whole process to do a committee bill in that regard, but can't impose the levy. The money is not going to come yet, but we will have the infrastructure ready. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate, as I hear you, you are saying we are on the right path, except for the imposition of the levy. Am I hearing you correct?
Correct, Chair. That's correct.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Advocate. Yep. We have yet to. Baba Chris Onsinga and Baba McDonald's. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. If we could perhaps, with your permission, Chairperson, get some insight in what the current passenger safety charge involves and if anything can be channeled from there. And, you know, whether a name change would be required to distinguish what is allocated for safety in terms of that passenger safety charge and what we envisage to ring fence, picking up on the idea of Advocate Jenkins. Good idea, I might add. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much. Honorable Hansinger, Honorable McDonald.
Chairperson, thank you. Yes, Chairperson, I agree with what Advocate Jenkins has said. Chairperson, it wasn't my intention that we impose a levy. It was just more that there is provision in this act for part of the passenger service levy to be kept in a somewhere for accident investigations. But I think I'm covered with what Africa Jenkins has said. If we can do it like that, Chairperson, it would be great. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, my Aminier. Advocate Jenkins, we're back to you. Are you able to help us clarify what Honorable Onsinger once clarified? We have three advocates in the House. If one can't, the two will. Let's start with Advocate Jenkins.
No, Chair, I can't. The allocation of specific funding and which part of the total budget belongs where, I'm not, I don't have that information. So I'm going to leave it to the other advocates, Chair. My apologies.
I'm sure they're going to run for their lives also. Let's test them. Advocate Almanel.
Chair, you should have gone to our friends in Canada and our friends in the DOT. It's their budget, Chair.
It's okay. Let me spare you for the moment. I don't want to see Toito in this house and matches of advocate to the Chair. Leave us.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. In fact, it is correct that when the passenger safety charge was established, it took into consideration the functions that were given to the CAA, which included the investigation of aircraft accidents and incidents. So as to what portion or percentage of that was in relating to the accident and incident investigation, I'm not able to say at this moment. That is, I think it's something that can be worked out. But then I think the principle here is that it's correct that a portion of that money which is collected by the airlines on behalf of the CAA, it included part of it, the functions of accident and incident investigation. So it will not be difficult for finance people to be able to separate that one out. So in actual fact, I think what can be done is to have a provision. I was running through the powers of the ministers to make regulations. I think we can find somewhere where then the minister can make a regulation that a certain portion of the passenger safety charge and the fuel levy could be channeled to accident and incident investigation. And then I also, let me take this opportunity to also talk to the question which was raised about the accident that may require a lot of money. Yes, it happens. It happens all over the world. We cannot appropriate enough money to deal with any eventuality. So in instances where the accident happens and the money required is excessive, it will need Parliament to get involved, because there must be a special appropriation for that. Because, for instance, you cannot make a budget for an example, the Malaysian aircraft that got lost. Even today, they are still incurring costs trying to investigate what happened, where the aircraft could be. So that will, it's a special case, so which will need its own special arrangement. So the budget will deal with the foreseeable circumstances based on the circumstances and the history of our aviation industry. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Livas. Thank you very much. Members, I think we have yet, and we seem to be all supporting what Honorable McDonald has come with, except for the imposition of levy, because we now know that Section 73 will not allow us to do that. Can we agree on that one, members, so that we can move?
Do agree, Chairperson. Let us move.
Thank you very much. Anybody who's not in agreement, violently opposed to the issues raised here. 1, 2, 3. Thank you very much, Advocate Almanel. I'm sure I'm back to the scope of advocates. I'm sorry to have subjected you to the problem, which is actually was not within your reach.
No problem, Chair.
Thank you very much.
I think as a former researcher, I was taught from a young age that at least if you don't know the answer, you can tell members, I know where to find the answer. Chair, just before we carry on, I just want to check if Mr. Sithole's question was answered regarding the other qualifications or qualifications that will be required and how we will ensure that transformation in the aviation industry is also covered in terms of the board appointment, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate. Livas Mabaso.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I can also attempt to take that one. Unfortunately, the issue of the people serving on the board is not entirely the experience and the knowledge required is not entirely dependent on us because they must satisfy the international standards. So we don't want to specify the qualifications in the Act because this covers a variety of areas that play a role in the accident, aircraft accident and incidents. For instance, it can be a specialist in weather, can be an air traffic controller, can be a pilot, can be an engineer. So those are basically some of the qualifications that are needed. And then if we take somebody who does not have the for the purposes of the board, it will not really be desirable to take somebody who does not have such expertise because the person sitting on the board itself must be able to interrogate the findings by the experts and be able to say, here you did not make a good finding, or I agree with the findings. So it needs expertise in that regard. So the transformation will be dealt with in the appointment of investigators themselves, like what is happening now. People who do not have the sufficient skills, they get absorbed and then they undergo through training before they get that expertise. But for the board, because this is the one that ultimately approves the report, so it needs special qualifications and experience. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Livas in Canada, all the way from Canada. Before I get reminded, I'm sure the Honorable Manu's question has been successfully answered. Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chair. Just going back. Okay, so we are now on the new proposed Section 29, functions of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. So members will see here they oversee the investigation, they take steps to achieve the objectives of the Act, they advise, they oversee on the performance of the functions of the board, they submit reports to all recipient states in compliance with Chapter 6. And they monitor implementation of safety recommendations issued by a contracting state. Their powers are also listed there, Chair. I'm not going to read through all of them. We didn't have too many inputs regarding whether or not the powers are not sufficient. A lot of the input rather focused on the independence of the work that they would be performing. The annual report, again, shared there because they are linked to the PFMA. This also just indicates by when they need to submit these reports to Parliament. The delegation of powers, It's also a standard clause, designation and powers of the investigators. Almost similar to what we had in the ERT discussion, this will allow the investigators to have unrestricted access and control over the aircraft at the site. They can examine the sites, compile the reports. They have unrestricted access to documents and information about records. They can obtain statements from persons. Summon and examine witnesses. So I'm just going a bit quick through that one. Here comes the specific clause 34 on search and seizure by appointed investigators. We had a few more comments on ERT regarding these types of powers, Chair. Not that many power, too many dissenting views on this one. I just want to go to this 34.5. This is the production of a certificate of appointment. So, Chair, the department did give some input on that submission about the certificate of appointment that they do need to have. As we saw in the other bills, as soon as they are appointed as investigators, in order to afford them these powers, they do need to have that certificate of appointment so that they can show who they are and why they are there. Just a production of credentials, Chair. Then the power to test items seized, the very technical aspects of what they can do, how they need to make sure that the conduct of such test is done to preserve evidence or items. Then a return of the seized property. Following the investigations, they will be allowed to return, or they would have to return those. Then the public inquiry. It's necessary that a public inquiry be conducted into aircraft accident or incidents. Then the notification to the department or aircraft accident or aircraft incident and investigation by department. Just where department is notified of an aircraft accident or incident in which such department has a direct interest. This would, for example, be the when you do have the SANDF aircraft or you have the SAPS aircraft, or if we have to go back to the calibration aircraft that was used by SACA, this is the clause that will look at that and how they have to be informed of that investigation going forward. Notification to the Minister of Department having a direct interest. This just requires them to make with must that they have to do those parts of it, Chair. And then attendance and removal of observers at aircraft accident or aircraft incident investigations. For any crime scene type investigation, one would need to cordon off. In order to ensure that the evidence and the scene is as intact as possible to assist in the investigation, not to sully the scene. Then, Chair, I'm just going to pause there before I go to the reporting, because I know with the reporting, there's also some input that we have to get to members, but I'd like us to finish those clauses up to 40 before we carry on to part 4, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate. Let me see hands.
Chairperson.
McDonald, I can see your hand before you call my name out. I've noticed your hand. Can you carry on?
Thank you, Chairperson. There's nothing in this section, Chairperson, that that vehemently jumps out at me, Chairperson. I think we have extensively discussed this one and this part, and I think we are all in agreement in this part. I think on the reporting side, this is where we have some disagreement, Chairperson. So this part I'm happy with, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any other different view? Let me see a hand. Going once, twice, any seconder to Honorable McDonald, his view that we must move to reporting. Boramado.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support what the Honorable McDear said. Thank you.
Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Chairperson, now we get to reporting. Chair, yes. Just to remind members on the reporting, there was quite a few comments and concerns raised on how long they would take to release reports, and in some instances when inquests will be done, whether or not inquest can be done automatically, or whether or not it goes with a application to court in order to call the inquest in. We did have some submissions. Some of the presenters, when they made the submissions, indicated their views as well on the inquest point. But Chair, just starting off with here with 41, aircraft accident or incident investigation report. So on completion of the investigation, the board must prepare and make available to the minister and the public a report on its findings, including any safety deficiencies that it has identified and any recommendations that it considers appropriate in the interest of aviation safety. Before making that report public, they need to send a copy of the draft report on its findings and any deficiencies identified to each department and other persons who, in their opinion, has a direct interest. Give that department or interested person reasonable opportunities to make representations, comply with provisions of Annex 13, and take into account protection of information provided for in this Act. Members will recall we had a lengthy discussion also about the inclusion of PIA, access to information, as well as POPI, protection of information. If they have some views on those issues in this bill as well. No person may communicate or use the draft report or permit its communication or use for any purpose other than the taking of remedial measures, not strictly necessary to the study of or preparation of representations concerned. Chair, I know some members had the view that even though it's not linked here or specifically stated in the bill, they do indicate that it goes to the minister or and the public or any other persons that have interest. Some members indicated a possible request to include the sending of these draft reports and the final reports to Parliament as well, or to the committee specifically. But we did indicate we normally prefer in the legislation to refer to Parliament or the National Assembly, who then will forward on those reports to the committee for their reporting or consideration. Chair, number 42, the manner of dealing with representations. These are now the representations after the draft reports have been sent. They must keep record thereof, consider those, and notify the persons who made them of how they used their representations. Representation is privileged, except if it is a representation made by a minister responsible for a department. They may use them where they consider it necessary in the interest of aviation, notification of findings and recommendations. Again, these will go in writing to the minister or any person who has a direct interest in these findings and recommendations. On completion, again, they must notify in writing the minister or person with a direct interest. They must comply with Annex 13 and furnish SACA with such findings as well. 44 allows for a response by the minister within 90 days after being notified on the actions and appropriate steps that have to will be taken, and give written reasons therefore. Chair, I'm just going to pause here before we get to the appeals, just to get some input from members through you, Chair.
We are now dealing with part four. Advocate, am I correct?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. There are two hands. Three. Let's start with Honorable MacDonald and followed by Honorable Chris Hunsinger. And then will be Honorable Sitame Bahala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I have lowered my hand in the process. Chairperson, regarding the reporting, I would humbly request through you, Chairperson, that it explicitly says that the draft report must come to Parliament, Chairperson, for many reasons. One of the things is that when a report in an accident, specifically a severe accident, is delayed because of a lot of other red tape, it can cause serious problems. I want to use the example of the Boeing 737 MAX, which had two major accidents before the plane was eventually grounded for extensive period. I think it was 2 years that the plane was grounded because of a software malfunction in the plane. Chairperson, I know that our airspace is not as busy as international airspaces, as America or the Europe, as an example. But we must be prepared that something like a severe accident like that is going to happen. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's the nature. It is just, we must prepare ourselves. Chairperson, that as one of the people that gave us comments on the bill as stipulated, it must be an automatic, because in the law there's already provision for when somebody dies in an accident that an inquest must be opened automatically. It is very important, Chairperson, that we deal with these things holistically and properly, because it's the people. I'm using the example of the SACA airplane, Chairperson. It's now going to 1 year and 4 months since that accident has happened. The poor families of those young people have not had a final closure on that accident, Chairperson, because of the way that the accident investigation is being done in this country at the moment and the way that the reporting is being done, Chairperson. And also, we need to have that when there's a protracted investigation, where it's a huge investigation, that the accident investigation board, at least every couple of months, give out a draft report how they are going along with the investigation and a possible completion. I think somebody already mentioned that they have to report every 12 months. But Chairperson, I think it must be stipulated directly with limits on where they must be and how this time. Yeah. Otherwise, Chairperson, us as Parliament will never have proper oversight over these reports, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable MacDonald. Masizwe Baba Mhlekazi Wunsinga.
Ngozigakulo, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to address three aspects, two relating to the report and one around the inquest. Apart from the report, we also have to deal with interim reports. Because some investigations are lengthy and extended, there must be a requirement for an interim report after a particular period of time relating to the investigation has transpired. So a 6 months interim report before the final report is what I propose. And then in relation to the report as referred to in the first section or the first column in the subsection, where the report is suggested to be tabled to the minister and the public, I want to recommend that that be changed to the minister and parliament, and that it then becomes public knowledge once it's been tabled to parliament. But then it's also important that such a report as an obligation be submitted to SACA, because they are the regulating entity in terms of conditions and specifications, technical elements. So it must also be parallel to submission of the report to the minister that SACA is also submitted with such a report. Lastly, Chairperson, with regards to the automatic triggering of inquests, it simply does not happen. So we need to tighten the belt on that, and then you know there's no current specified procedure through which family is being informed about reasons for a accident or a crash, and a lot of families still have no closure on this, and I think we should investigate firmer procedures around inquests, that it happens, but then also that a particular communique is done to the family. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ansinga. Masimthola Ubaba Sithole.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, I'm trying to check on the aircraft accident or incident investigation report. I must say, Chairperson, the portfolio committee must receive a report, because if you check it and it says just the public, it means that report can go to public without going to portfolio committee. And the other Chairperson, I'm trying to check here, when you check 41A, 41 2A, where it says send a copy of the draft report on its findings and any safety deficiencies that it has identified to each department and any other person who in the opinions. I'm worried about that. Any other person who is in the opinion of Aviation Safety Investigation Board has a direct interest. If you say any other, what does that mean? Any other person or any other relevant department? I'm trying to check that on Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ketama Balastole. Back to you, Advocate Alma. Do you want to answer some few questions as we move on?
Chair, just to let members know, there is a clause in the bill in the next part further down 52 where they deal with applications to the court for inquest. But if members would like the discussion of the inquest to be done at this point, we can ask our legal advisors and the department just to clarify those concerns.
No, we will do it when we get there, Advocate. Thank you. Dan Advocate?
Yes, Chair. I think on the other aspects, we can just get the input there from Advocate Jenkins and the Department Chair.
Baba Advocate to Masombuge. Okay. As we're looking for the advocate, maybe he's busy stretching some legs. Do call him back. Let's get Advocate Frank Jenkins.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I understand the question correctly, again, it's we need to get the interim report or the draft report on an accident sent to Parliament prior to the public. Chair, I would agree with that from a legal perspective. Not that it must be done like that, but the fact is that Parliament represents the people. And Parliament is the center where the debate will happen, whether there was a, whatever the reason for the accident was, whatever the consequences will be. So I would think that, but I would think it's certainly not illegal. It's not unreasonable to do it. I think it makes sense. It is a policy matter, though, for the committee to decide. But I think one can just write Parliament in there again, where the interim support must be submitted. Well, I would write in National Assembly. Parliament would be both houses. So that's a question one must take. But if we write a role in for the NCOP, select committee should also be consulted, I would think. Or just to see if they agree with it. But definitely from National Assembly side, we can say that it should report to the National Assembly. That's where the oversight happens mostly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Let's get to a man in Canada. Mdo.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think we should distinguish between a preliminary report and a final report. So I think those are the correct terms used for the reports in this instance. So a preliminary report has to be issued if the accident is taking longer to finalize. So the investigators are obliged to issue a preliminary report. So to me, because the reporting of the accident are governed by Annex 13 to the Chicago Convention. So whatever a policy decision that the committee makes should not be found to be perhaps deviating much from the requirements of Annex 13. As far as submitting the report to Parliament, I would recommend that the final report be submitted to Parliament. So to me, it doesn't matter whether it is before it goes public or after, but if the committee wants it before, it will still be okay. But because I don't think it's submitted to Parliament for the Parliament to influence the report, but for Parliament to be able to oversee the overall investigation, the overall management of civil aviation in the country. Because if then it's supported for the purpose, submitted to the Parliament for the purpose of them influencing the report, then it will be the contravention of the convention. And then as far as the reporting, the accident investigation division now, they submit quarterly reports. They are required to submit quarterly reports to the minister. It's not every 12 months, every quarter, they submit a quarterly report of what happened in the quarter. So including accidents that are still pending, those that have been delayed, and then they explain what the situation is. Because this issue of the quarterly reports is better captured in the regulations, and also the issue of the issuing of the preliminary report and the final report, because the times are prescribed by the international standards, so which may change when the circumstances evolve. So if we put those in the Act, because it's much difficult to amend the Act, but if we keep them in the regulations, then it's much easier to amend the regulations when the international standards have changed. Yeah, I think I've addressed the questions as they come. Yeah, over to you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. It seems like something simple is becoming very complicated now, but such are technicalities and such is the legal environment. Chairperson, I think we must be very clear in our description and requirements around the three categories of reports that is now clear after Mr. Mabaso spoke. We are talking of a final report, which mm-hmm. I suggest should be submitted to the minister, as well as to the National Assembly, as well as to SACA. Then we deal with progress reports, which I suggest should be submitted to the minister, as well as to the to Parliament, National Assembly. And then we deal with interim reports that I suggest should only be submitted to the minister. In our oversight role, we can then query the minister and get information from him. But I think a interim report is something sensitive, and it should be limited to the insight and view of the minister alone. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we leave with that view? Any seconder?
Thank you, Chairperson. I second.
Any person who's against? Going. Thank you very much, Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just getting my screen share back up. Then on part 5, 45, appeals against findings. So Chairperson will see any affected person who feels aggrieved may appeal against such findings to an appeal committee established in terms of section 122 of the Act within 60 days after the publication of such findings. I don't recall any real issues with the appeal process in the submissions. And the board must, within 60 days after receipt of the appeal, deliver a written reply. So the appellant must do it within 60 days, or they may do it within 60 days. And then the board must give a response thereto within 60 days. Reopening of aircraft accident or incident investigations. Minister may, upon request, decide to reopen an investigation if new evidence arises and it's likely to influence the findings, or the findings have been set aside in terms of section 45(6), and that is in terms of the appeal process here, where the committee can confirm, vary, or set aside the findings. Then, Chair, the minister may prescribe the conditions subject to which such a reopening shall be conducted. Part 6, privileged and protected information. Chair will see here the different information that is available to the investigators. So here we get a definition Just before we get to that, Chair, here on line 41, we did have in the old A list a proposal to add here after safety, which is here, to substitute this and for an or. Because both of those instances don't have to be applicable. It could be either of those instances in order to get the reopening up, Chair. Then on privileged and protected information, this is the definition of the onboard recording. Privilege for onboard recording, these are privileged, except as otherwise provided by this chapter, and no person will be able to allow to access this. Or they won't be required to produce it. We'll see in the access to information, in some instances in the Act, you can request access to information, but if the information is privileged, due to a clause like this, the general public or persons requesting it in terms of PIO would not have access to it. So this is just to strengthen the privileged nature of that information. The access by the investigator, despite Section 48, which deals with the privilege, any onboard recording that relates to an aircraft accident or incident being investigated must be released to the investigator. The use of onboard recordings, they will be able to use this then in terms of their reports to look at safety deficiencies. Access to onboard recordings by other investigators. Here, Chair, the ASIP must make available any onboard recording obtained under this Act to any person carrying out a coordinated investigation under Section 13. So, Chair, this might also be when it's multiple investigating bodies involved in a similar crash, then the person that has or the body that has access to that information should share it. Power of court or inquest. Chair, here is where the inquest aspect comes in. Despite any provisions in the chapter where in any proceedings before a court or a judicial inquest in terms of the Inquest Act or a person or persons appointed or designated to conduct public inquiry into these incidents, a request for the production and discovery of an onboard recording is made, the court or judicial inquest in terms of the Inquest Act or a person appointed thereto must, and then this is what is required of them to produce. But Chair, this is specifically linked to the access of the onboard recording. This is not linked to the proposal that was made by Mr. Hunsinger on an automatic inquest in the instance of a death in a collision or a crash or incident. Chair, I want to pause here after the inquest before I get back onto the use of the recordings, because in the submissions we did get some input on the application of the Inquest Act and whether or not in terms of the opinion of the person that made the submission there is a need to include an automatic inquest in the bill as requested or proposed by the members. And I think, Chair, we just need some clarity on that before we carry on, whether or not the Inquest Act will apply automatically in terms of any incident or whether or not in terms of this bill, it's only going to have application to access to the onboard recordings. So, Chair, I'd like to just give it back to you at this point.
Thank you, Advocate, for remembering me. Let me see hands. Inquest, Advocate, Honorable Chris Wansinger. I see your hand. If it's not there, I'm pleading for it. I can see it is there now. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've raised the point several times. It is my conviction, Chairperson, that something must trigger an inquest automatically. And it must be such that it cannot be ignored, that it is not subjected to additional application. And furthermore, that there is an inherent obligation to reply to the family, to give them closure as to the reasons for such a tragic incident. So those would be the core elements of my thinking around this, that the inquest should be triggered automatically, that we should look at measures through which the inquest is then also fulfilled, and that this would the circle would be completed once the family has been informed as to the causes of such a tragic incident. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir, for honoring your commitment. Are we in agreement on this issue of the inquest that is triggered automatically, honorable members? Let me get any support. Do we still have members in the house in the first place? Honorable McDonald?
I support Chairperson.
Yes.
I also support Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Who else? Honorable Yabo? Thank you, Honorable Ramatwa. Honorable Yabo? Honorable Yabo is drinking some water. Okay. Honorable Fikile Khumalo. McDonald, where are your members? Baba Utami Wagamapena.
Chairperson, we are all here, except we have somehow got connection difficulties.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm happy now. I can hear you. Yes.
I'm still present. I'm in support.
Thank you very much. I like that voice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mtunga, Baba Utami Wagamapena.
Yeah, I've been raising my hand virtually for the longest time. I mean,
okay, I'm sorry that I did not see your hand. Thank you very much, honorable members, advocate.
I think if we can just get input there from from Advocate Jenkins, because I did just I mentioned the Inquest Act aspect to him a little bit earlier. We just need to make sure for drafting purposes on what will trigger the automatic inquest. Are we going to link it to the instance that there is a death from a crash or incident, or exactly how we are going to trigger the inquest for inclusion, Chairperson?
Honorable Ansinga, can you clarify this matter?
Chairperson, I would suggest that it runs concurrently with a incident of investigation. Not necessarily a death, but injury can be just as harmful. I'm thinking of a worst case scenario where someone is not conscious following such an incident and cannot recall, and even in injury, even in being involved, it still does not explain the cause of the accident to the family. even to the people that are involved themselves. So I would submit, Chairperson, that a report to family and a report to people involved be split from inquest, which involves death, so that we cover the whole scope of responsibility to everybody that is involved to receive a report, but that inquest obviously is related to death, so that upon death and investigation, the inquest then is triggered, if that's clear.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether to call you an advocate also, Honorable Hansinger. What were you called when you were practicing? Attorney?
I'm a member of parliament, Chair. That would be sufficient.
Okay.
A public representative is fine to me.
Thank you very much. Advocate, is that clear?
Thank you, Chair. I hope for the draft it's clear enough.
Thank you very much. I don't see any hands from their side, so they are happy. Can we move, Advocate?
Yes, Chair. I'm doing my screen share. Here we go. Carrying on from 53, the use of onboard recording in instances where it would be prohibited. So that just flows again from the previous ones. Then, Chair, just to pull members' attention quickly here, there was a spelling correction in the draft A list here under 53B, where it reads in the bill aerodrone, but it should be aerodome. So that is already proposed in the draft A list.
Okay, Advocate, you are saying it should be aerodrome, not aerodrome.
Yes, Chair, this N is just a typo over there.
So when I go to OR Tambo, I am now going to the aerodrome.
Aerodrome, Chair. If you go to OR Tambo International, pretty soon you will be calling the Aerotropolis, which is the whole area around OR Tambo, Chair.
I tend to understand what Honorable Stoll is saying. So I'll be going to
It's the aerodrome, the entire airspace that surrounds the airport. But the new phrase, which is also airport city, is a new phrase. It's called the Aerotropolis. It's the whole area including the hotels and the commercial side of things, Chairperson. But for purposes of the Act, let's focus on aerodrome.
Aerodrome. So you were saying that the typo is aerodrome.
Yes, the typo is drone. This drone. It must be dome. Aerodrome.
Okay, sure.
Okay, Chair. Going on to communication record. So Chair, this is just the definition of what communication record means for purposes of the investigations. So that the investigators will also have access to that apart from the onboard voice recordings. Then here, Chair, on statement privileged, this is just the definition of what that statement would mean. So it would have to fall within this definition in order for it to get the privileged status. So it's the statements regarding the incidents or the accidents and the transcriptions thereof. Then, Chair, here we get under 56, the access by judicial inquest and other investigators. This will be, again, access that is linked to the statements. So it links up to the topic above. The power of the court to or inquest with regard to statements. So firstly, it's access, who can gain access to it, or they should be allowed access to it, and then the power of them to request those statements. when will the use of statements be prohibited? That is under clause 58. And then 59 speaks to when certain information is privileged. So Chair, again, this is just to cover those instances under PIA, where people will not be able to get access to that information once the investigators have obtained access to it. The use of a report made to Aviation Safety Investigation Board under the reporting system. So a report made to ASIP under the voluntary reporting system established by the rules must not be used against the person who made the report in any legal, disciplinary or other proceedings. The appearance of investigator, except for proceedings before judicial inquest, an investigator is not competent or compellable to appear as a witness in any proceedings unless the court or other person or body before whom they are conducting so orders for a special cause. So purely because they are an investigator doesn't give them that specialist linkage in order to appear before a judicial inquest. The opinions that will be inadmissible: an opinion of a member of the board, an investigator or accredited representative is not admissible as evidence in any legal, disciplinary or other proceedings. Chair, I just want to pause there to see if there's any input before I go to the rules, because the rules speak to aspects that the board will control and set up.
So am I right, Advocate, that we are currently at clause 62?
Yes, Chair, I'm stopping at 62 before we get to 63, part 7.
Thank you very much. I hope members are still as alert as I am. Let me just check that by looking at the hands. Wow. McDonald's support, Ramada support. Is that a new way?
Sorry, Chair, that's my notes so that I can track what was said in the meeting, Chair.
Okay, I'm wide awake, Advocate. Let me see, hands, members, any other issue you have? Let's see a hand that say we can move on to rules, that is clause 63. Anybody in there? Oh, Honorable Tamima Ben. Oh, I can see a new way, Honorable Chris Hansinger. Wow. Oh, okay.
I've been getting my chair, but you didn't
understand. No, I've already apologized because I know you are in tandem with the technology employee. Wow. Let's move, Advocate. Seemingly there's nobody who has an issue. We all agree. The committee agrees.
Okay, Chief. Then part 7, the rules, proposed section 63. The board may make rules for the establishment and administration of systems for the mandatory or voluntary reporting to the board of aircraft accidents or aircraft incidents. So, Chair, the rules will prescribe the manner on how they carry out their powers and duties, how they keep their records, attendance of interested persons at tests that are allowed to be conducted, and so on. So this will be the rules under which they do their work, Chair. Then the procedure for making rules, a copy of each rule that the board proposes to make must be published in the Gazette, calling on interested persons to make representations to the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. They must consider all representations made, and the rules shall come into operation on a date determined. This is similar to the regulations that are made by the Minister, Chair. again, as indicated by the department, there may be instances where these rules need to be amended on short notice or based on international regulations or new international best practice that comes in, which is why the slightly shorter method of doing it is proposed via the board instead of going via the minister's regulations. So I don't know if members want input there before we go on to offences, or if they are happy with the board rulemaking processes, Chair.
So we now go into part 8, clause 65, advocate as I look at it. Members, any issue, you are free to raise your hands. Right, I will not read this one because it's advocate's notes. Let me see members' hands. Honorable McDee.
Chairperson, I am not in disagreement with what the advocate has said, Chairperson. I'm actually supporting it, Chairperson. So we can continue.
I can see you are now part of the meeting properly, and congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Anybody who supports Honorable McDonald?
I support Honorable McDonald. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Boramadwa. Anybody who's against? Honorable Lawrence McDonald, lower your hand. Thank you very much, members. Can we proceed, Advocate Almanel?
Yes, Chair. Then going on to part 8, the offences. So this will relate to the investigation and the power that the board has. When persons resist or otherwise obstruct the investigators, when they knowingly give false information, they would be guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or term of imprisonment not exceeding 2 years. If they refuse or fail to produce information, then again, they would be guilty of an offence. So Chair, this just seeks to assist the board and the investigations in performing their duties so that they do get cooperation from all persons involved. Evidence, Chair, this would then cover all documents or scene aspects that they do collect. So a report signed by an investigator stating that they've exercised any power pursuant to Section 33 and stating the results, or a document purporting to have been certified by an investigator as a true copy, is admissible in evidence in any prosecution for an offence under this Act without proof of the signature of the official character of the person. No report or document must be received in evidence under this section unless the party intending to produce it has at least 7 days before producing it served a notice of the intention on the person against whom it's intended, together with a copy of the report. So they do need to give some notice when they are producing it as evidence. And that person against whom it may be submitted will be allowed to cross-examine the contact thereof. Part 9, the transitional arrangements and liability of members, staff, and accredited representatives, experts, and advisors of ASIP. Chair, I think there was some comment in the submissions regarding the liability and whether or not they should be excluded. So we might get some comments here from members. I just want to go down here. See if I can find it. I do recall there were some issues about it, Chair. But Chair, just going on to the investigations, a matter that is in the course of being investigated, but on which the report has not been made when the Act comes into force, will be taken up and continued by the Board. The liability of members, a member of ASIP, accredited by virtue of their appointment, would have done so in good faith or made known in terms of the Act. Internal proceedings of investigations are not open to the public. Then, Chair, there is this amendment of Section 69 of the Act. So just before I get to the amendment of Section 69, I just want us to finish this part on the transitional arrangements, because this is still part of the new chapter. So, Chair, if there's any input from members there up until before we get here to the next clause, we're going up to 68, Chair, page 25.
Thank you very much for coming back to the Chair, Advocate. Let's check whether there is any input by members. I'll see by hands. I'm looking in all directions. Can see these hands are coming from different directions now. Seemingly there's none, according to my looking. Let's get an honorable member who says, let's proceed.
And I propose that we proceed, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hansinga Inkosigakulu. Any seconder?
I second, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Wow. The women alive now in this house. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair.
Can we deal with the clause 70?
Okay, Chair, we are at the amendment of Section 69 of the Act.
That's 69.
Yes, okay, I'm just going down to Section 69 quickly for members, so we can have that comparison. Okay, Chair, Section 69 deals with the Commission of Inquiry in terms of the Constitution. So the bill proposes Section 69 be amended with a substitution of Subsection 2. So it is this one that we're going to be changing now, Chair.
Mm-hmm.
So that it reads, nothing contained in subsection 1 must be construed as affecting the powers and duties conferred or imposed upon judicial officers by the Inquest Act. So, Chair, if members are happy with that proposed change of Section 69, we can move on to changes of Section 71.
Before we go to 71, let me check if members give me a thumbs up whether they are happy or they want to input. Honorable members, up to you. Let me see hands. Thumbs up. Members are ready from Honorable Chris Hunsinger. Any Honorable McDonald?
Chairperson, I'm very happy, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
you keep on improving. Thank you very much. Advocate or anybody who's not who has a different view, going once, twice, three times, Section 71, Advocate, let's move.
Okay, Chair, the amendment of 71, this is a proposal to amend that section in its entirety. We see here 71 looks and deals with establishment of the Civil Aviation Authority. So this is what 71 looked like. This is what we propose it looks like now, establishment of Civil Aviation Authority. A juristic person known as the South African Civil Aviation Authority, established by Section 2 of the SACA Act 1998, shall be deemed to have been established by this act. So, Chair, if members are happy with that, we can move on to the next clause.
Honorable members, happiness or any other view?
Extreme happiness, Chairperson.
Honorable Hansing and Honorable McDonald, any dissenting view? Going once, going twice. Thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members. Back to your advocate, Section 73.
Okay, Chair, we're going to clause 11, Section 72.
Or is it 72?
Yes, Chair, yeah, on this one.
Chapter 6.
Section 72 deals with the objects of the Civil Aviation Authority. So, Chair, there's just some aspects of this that's changed. It's not going to change in its entirety. So there is a substitution for paragraph A and B with the following A and B: control and regulate civil aviation safety, security, and environmental protection. And then B, oversee the implementation of the National Aviation Security Program. Then there is a deletion of the word and at the end of paragraph E. So this and will go away. Then we substitute F with the following: monitor and ensure compliance with this act. This is again a consequential amendment. And then we have a new subsection G: exercise any power, perform any duty conferred or imposed on it under any law. So, Chair, if members are happy with that, we can go to clause 12.
Let me check the happiness of my members. Honorable Chris Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm not sure where this fits in. So I would ask for your intervention to then involve specialists on this. But the role of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee that we've had valid input of in relation to their 77 years of involvement as aviation specialists in conjunction with civil aviation, I'm just scared that it might go lost in us just working through the proposed amendments and not sort of addressing the role and function that they have. So I'm putting it on the table, if you would allow, Chairperson, so that we don't run out of the process in ignoring this or finding it not being addressed at all. At your discretion, Chairperson. Thank you.
The table is brought, honorable member. The intention is to try and be as accommodative as possible and as mean also as possible. There it is. Members, are we in agreement? Anybody who agrees with this? Let me see hands. It goes back to me going to fish for members. It's okay, I still have that energy. Baba Keta Baba, lusa se kona ba.
Oh, no.
Ngalanga we babu thini wena uyavuma lento ekhulunywe lendoda uyavumelana naye
ngiyavuma futhi
ngiyabonga Mondizi Thank you very much. Mama ufikile. Wakwakhuma uthini wena?
Uyami.
Yebo mama.
Uyangizwa sihlala.
Angiphethe kamnandi kakhulu.
Oh, ngiyabonga. Cha ngeke uma sihlala wasambeni.
Nako uyasambeni. Hawu ngalithanda lelo gama. Anybody who has any other issue, members are agreeable with Honorable Hansinger. I'm sure he understands Zulu, he would have yet. Any dissenting views, members? Thank you very much, Advocate.
Thank you, Chi. On the regulating committee, I think it's the CARCOM that Honorable Hansinger is referring to. I think we're going to get to that a little bit later under section 1551 to address those concerns that were raised in the submissions, Chair.
Section 1551.
Yeah, so that will be a bit further down, 155, Chair.
We are still on section 72 now.
We are going to clause 12, amendment of section 73 now, Chairperson.
Yeah.
So the regulating committee is not lost yet. We will still get there. So Mr. Hansinger's request to attend to that should be dealt with under section 155 when we get there, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Chair, clause 12, amending section 73. 73 looks at the functions of SACA. So there's some aspects of those provisions that will be amended. Okay. The proposal is a substitution of subsection 1, paragraph A, with preceding paragraph A, with the Civil Aviation Authority as the function of conducting the safety, comma, security and environmental protection oversight. So Chair, this is a consequential amendment from the previous one to include environmental protection. Chair, we'll see all throughout this is really that's the main aim of this amendment. It's just to add environmental protection standards. And then also here, issuing approvals, certificates, licenses, registration and permits. Just want to go to the next page. Again, we see environmental protection added as well there. Here we have the addition of security and environmental protection. Then under the new proposed additions to G and H is instead of reading conducting regular timely assessments, it should now just read conducting flight inspection services, formulating supporting regulations and approving technical standards through a consultative process with the aviation industry as prescribed. Then Chair, carrying on here, is amendments to subsection 1 again, to J, K, L and M, as well as N. So J will then read ensuring adequacy of security programs and ensuring documentation produced by aviation participants. Again, here we use aviation participants instead of this whole list of security services, airport administration, and air service operators. So it reads a little bit better there, Chair. Then here also under L, ensuring the formulation of aviation emergency plans instead of disaster plan. M, encouraging a greater acceptance by the aviation industry of its obligation to maintain high standards. Again, we have environmental protection added here. Chair will see all those amendments relate to the environmental protection aspect. The same for the new D, the same for the new J. And under I, we just have an amendment here to subsections, because there's reference to two subsections, not just one. and that these functions must be performed by the commissioner because of the proposed change of director of aviation to commissioner of aviation and staff. So, Chair, I'd like to pause there on clause 12 before we get to clause 13.
Clause 12. Thank you, Advocate. As we deal with clause 12, let me see if members have anything to say or they are okay. Happiness from Honorable Chris Winsinger. Thank you very much. Let's get a supporting hand.
Good afternoon.
I've changed the back.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Good afternoon, Jumpers.
I do support the Honorable Hunsinger. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, my brother. Are you back from your lunch?
Yes, Chair. I didn't want to disturb you, but I spoke to Honorable McDee on the side.
Thank you very
about
much.
My circumstance.
Thank you very much for respecting the chair and coming back. Thank you very much. Liva, seemingly you have a problem in Canada. Let's hear from you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just want to bring something to the attention of the Honorable Committee. There is a provision that is added. I didn't note the number, where we are on the functions of the CAA, where we are adding flight inspection services. So in light of the accident involving the calibration aircraft of the CAA, there is a possibility of a policy shift that those functions will be taken away from the, will be separated from the regulation functions of the CAA. So if that happens, it might mean now we have to come back and amend the act to just deal with this just this clause. So if it's agreeable to the committee, might as well deal it in such a way that if that policy is approved, it does not entail coming back to amend the act. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
So in essence, what are you saying, Livers?
Honorable Chair, I'm saying this addition, this is scrolling to the provision now. So it will
be,
I think it's down. It's on G. Yes, we are proposing the substitution of the current G with a new provision that's conducting flight inspection services. So flight inspection services, Honorable Chair, it means the calibration services.
Yeah.
Yes, so because the CAA was doing that, but it was not authorized in the Act, so we're bringing that as the additional function of the CAA. So now with the accident involving accident of the aircraft which was used for that purpose, we have come to realize that it makes sense to separate the service provision from regulation, because the CAA still has to regulate that service. So they cannot provide the service and regulate it at the same time.
Okay.
So if now the committee approves the insertion of this flight inspection services into the Act, and now if we are starting with the aviation policy review now, and we are going to make that proposal. So if that proposal is accepted, it will mean now we'll have to come back and amend the Act, because then this service will have been assigned to the CAA by the Act. So the proposal is that we might remove it or find a neutral provision which when the policy eventually is passed, that this should be separated from the regulation function. It should not entail that we have now to draft the amendment of the act.
Advocate Almanel.
Chair, I think if the department requests it, they might just need to bring a draft amendment proposal here, because this new bill is taking away the following, which was in the act: conducting regular and timely assessment of international safety and security developments. They now, in terms of the bill, proposing a change from conducting flight inspection services. But according to the new information, if the policy is changed, the conducting of flight inspection services will then most likely need to be amended in future. I think the committee may have to look at this, because a lot of the aspects, even some of the comments that we got on the aviation safety bill, or the new proposed aviation safety bill, that might come in. These are changes that might come in, and I think Advocate Jenkins might also give some input on this. I know in the past we don't like to necessarily legislate now for proposals that might come in, because that changes to the aviation safety amendment bill might also bring changes to this bill. But that will be done in that bill. So this will have to be a decision from members. And then we just need some advice and input from the parliamentary legal advisors on this, Chair.
I'm trying to be as reasonable as possible, Advocate. Let me accommodate Advocate Frank Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. I think the department must, and I say this with respect, they must be sure what they want in the act, because what we're trying to do with the amendment, and let me also just be clear, of course, we're working with the department on this. What we're trying to do with the amendment is creating the legal foundation for the exercise of those functions. So if we need it now, if they are going to conduct those functions now and they do not have it, then we must continue with the provision as it is. And if it changes later, if the policy is accepted later, then fine, then we change it. But perhaps it happens faster in certain departments than others. But in my experience, for a policy change to be translated into a signed enactment, it takes 2 to 3 years, sometimes even longer. So I think the department must look at this from the perspective of risk management. Because if someone is conducting functions which is not supported by legislation, that will be challenged by whoever is on the receiving end of a negative finding by that body. And you will challenge it by saying you never had that power to do it. And it's a principle of legality. So there will be a constitutional challenge then to the functions, because you do not have legislative power to do it. So I think the department must be sort of almost pedantic with it. If we need that power now, even though it might change later, and say, if I may, in a lighter sense, we're all growing. I mean, we stay the same size number. Once we were quite small, so we've grown. Things have changed. Our clothes have changed. What we need has changed. But at that point, we needed that clothes and that size shoe. So if we need that size shoe now, we fit it. If we don't need it now, then let's not waste time, and we do with what we must do. So I think the department must just be 100% clear, because it's about the purpose. It's not trying to overcomplicate things, Chair. Thank you.
You have compensated for your loss earlier when we were talking about that, the other one, which you said we must ask the other advocate.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we're very clear, and I can see Livers also agrees. That makes us pretty certain on what we are working on and what is on our table right now. Advocate Alma Nell. Can we proceed?
Okay, Chair. I think for purposes of today, clause 13 will be our last one, so that we can carry on at the next tomorrow. Clause 13 is an amendment of section 74. So Chair, we'll see in the A list, there was already a proposed substitution of D. So I'll get to that when I get to this line over here, but let's focus on the top ones. Section 74 of the Principal Act, members, deals with the funding of SACA. So here there's a proposal of a change to paragraph B, levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aviation as prescribed. An amendment to paragraph F, any other money received in terms of South African Civil Aviation Authority Levies Act or any other legislation, including the income derived from the fees and fines contemplated in this act. And then a substitution of subsection 3, Civil Aviation Authority shall endeavor to consult with relevant stakeholders as part of the process to determine the charges, fees and levies contemplated in subsection 1. And then we'll get to this amendment in terms of the A list. The suggestion here is as follows. The charges, fees and levies contemplated in subsection 1 or any amendment thereto must be published in the Gazette at least 4 months prior to their coming into operation. A new 5, in instances where a person who has collected any money, fee, charge or levy on behalf of civil aviation authorities liquidated, placed under business rescue or is placed under administration, the civil aviation authority is entitled as a preferential creditor to recover any such money, fee, charge or levy so collected by such person. So Chair, this was the new clause that we advertised for additional comments. And there was some submissions where they weren't exactly happy with it saying all the fees or charges. They wanted it to be specific that it should be the fees that are collected and the department indicated correctly on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority, not the other charges that they may from time to time levy for services. So Chair, then if members are happy with that, I think that is where we can leave this bill for today, Chair.
Advocate Almanel, thank you very much for steering this ship up to so far. Let me quickly see if members are happy before we move on other issues. Happy, Honorable Hansinger, thank you very much. Who's supporting? Happy, Honorable Manu. Anybody who's not happy? Going one. Oh. Mondes, are you happy, my brother? Thank you very much.
Happy, my brother.
Thank you very much. That's where we end. I think we've covered sufficient ground up to so far. Advocate, tomorrow and honorable members, we will continue from 9 o'clock and try and cover some more ground. It would not be like today because we have 3 issues on the agenda tomorrow, which I will talk about after this following item. But thank you very much to all the officials of the department. I hope Advocate Masombuga hears me, for your constructive participation, state law advisors, honorable members and everybody that was with us today. Should you want to be released, you are gladly liberated. DM, thank you very much. We saw you. I don't know if you are still with us, but we saw that you had connected. Can we now move quickly, honorable members, to the minutes of the 10th of February at any adoption? of the minutes or any correction? Any correction and then adoption. Baba Mangu, Ulisa Wagwamangu.
I move for adoption of the minutes, Chair, as a correct reflection.
Thank you very much, Jambase. Any seconder? Any seconder going once?
Seconded, Chair, Honorable McDonald.
Honorable McDonald seconded. Any matters arising? Going once, twice. Thank you very much. Can we move for the adoption of the minutes of the 16th, which members already have? Any mover? Ubaba Ulisa Wagwamangu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 16th of February as a true reflection of our meeting.
Thank you very much, Chambers. Any seconder?
I second it, Chair.
Mundis, thank you very much. Tomorrow, honorable members, we shall be dealing with, in the May, three items. We will, as item number three, be considering and adopting the minutes of the 17th of February. And that set of minutes as a draft is already with us. So members are urged to find time and just go through that set of minutes. We will be deliberating also on the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. That's the continuation of today's meeting. I think we've covered sufficient ground for today. We will go further tomorrow, and that will be from 9 o'clock until 11 o'clock. And then from 11 o'clock, we will run to another deliberation, and that will be on the economic regulation of transport, ERT. That will be doing from 1 minute past 11 to 12:45 exactly, because then we need also to run comfortably with item number three, where we will be considering and adopting the minutes of the 17th. With that having said, let me thank all the members for having presented themselves in today's meeting, official as it is, and I'm sure the members will just remember that after this, we will meet at another level where the speaker will be chairing all of us until we meet again tomorrow. And let me thank also Advocate Almanel for demonstrating once more about the ability, the energy and capability of assisting this committee whenever you are needed. Go and rest, Advocate. We need you fresh tomorrow. We will pile some work, get some two bills, and we want to move forward as we have done today. Otherwise, from my side, long live everybody that attended this meeting. Long live. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chair. Long live.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
See you at 2 o'clock.